get it going. It's time to get up.
Klingberg from the line, right side. Gurianov shoots and scores. Dennis Gurianov with a one-timer for the right circle beats Robin Leonard left side, and the Dallas Stars are going to the Stanley Cup Final for the first time in 20 years.
These guys are here to break it all down.
Snap, set, kick. Good!
Let's have a little fun and make you a winner.
We're not going home!
This is The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday, September the 15th. This is your Ski Patrol. James Cebulski, Perry Solkowski here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. And just for the record, we should clarify that Stephen Gostkowski is not part of the Ski Patrol. Perry Solkowski is. Yours truly, James Cebulski, is. Gostkowski, no. Right, Per?
Yeah, we had a vote at about 8:30 yesterday going, you know, everybody is a natural ski. We had calls out to the future Hall of Famer. We would decline him to be on the show. We would Drew Brees him, if you will. You know, the interesting thing, that was the dud of all football games, the last one left. I think if people were only watching it because they probably had some money wagered on it. But I was nervous. Like, I'm going, okay, just score. I don't want to see this. I feel bad for him. I'm glad I'm still in touch with my human emotions. I'm going, no, don't force him to kick. And if you miss, like, what is his family going through? He's had a wonderful career. He's made his money. But, boy, talk about between the years in sports. Good on him to kick it. But that was awful last night for him. Felt bad.
He pulled it off. He got it done. Now, we should also mention we are hanging out with you until 9 o'clock this morning here on Sportsnet 650. 650 is our text line. At Sportsnet 650 is where you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. At P. Solkowski is where you can find Perry on Twitter. At James Cebulski is where you can find yours truly on Twitter as well. And I think the encouraging thing, Per, before we kind of dive in on everything, I think the encouraging thing is today is not Monday. Based on the slew of poop emojis that were served up for so many of us when we woke up yesterday, whether it was a fire, whether it was train derailments, whether it was COVID case at a high school in South Delta, whether it was one thing after another, we've got smoke still hanging over us right now. We're in the midst of a pandemic. I think the good thing is today's Tuesday.
James, I would completely agree with you. It was nice to hear the rain coming down. We took our little, great nephew, call it what you will. We just took him out for a little bite to eat last night. And, you know, I had a nice visit. And put yesterday to bed. Although when I woke up this morning and walked to the front door to walk outside, there was a present left by one of the dogs. I don't know which dog. There's three of them in this house. And so, as much as you say we put a terrible Tuesday to bed, and we did, and I don't want to have my problems go on it, that was not necessarily the positive start that I wanted to see. Now, a little cleaning needs to be done. I didn't have the time this morning. So at some point when I'm on the air, I'm sure there'll be a conversation. I don't think it'll be heated. No one's mad at the dog, but you know how it is with the little one, with Odie there and making sure the dog's outside getting the business done. I don't have six-year-olds running around in my house. So there is going to have to be a rally the troops coach's speech, a la whether it's going to be like I would use my timeouts better than Vic Fangio did yesterday. I don't know what he was doing in Denver, but yes, yesterday is put to bed. I'm going to have to start what has been a slow start to this household, although I'm the only one at this point that knows what we ran into. Now, I could keep it to myself and not tell my family, but that's not the case. I cleaned up, left the rug outside to go. Someone else has got some work to do. So there'll be a text going to someone. I just don't know at what time I'll text and go, hey, you're getting up early because there's some business you have to take care of in this house. So
squeaky wheel
bring on Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah. Squeaky wheel gets the oil. I, I think there's something to be said about that. Here's what we got coming up over the next 3 hours here on the show. In just over an hour, we welcome Todd Bertuzzi. It's Bertuzzi here on this Tuesday morning, and the big man will join us just after 7 o'clock. Looking forward to that conversation each and every week. Coming up at 8 on your Canucks commute, Sportsnet reporter Dan Murphy, our Canucks insider, if you will drop on by and join the conversation. And then at 8:30, Jesse Granger, who covers the Vegas Golden Knights for The Athletic, will drop on by. And that's where we should probably start this morning, because the Dallas Stars have advanced to the Stanley Cup Final, rapidly dispatching of the Vegas Golden Knights in 5 games. And whether it was the Demko effect or not, the Dallas Stars, man, they look ready to roll in the Stanley Cup against whether it's the Lightning or the Islanders. And, man, don't look now, Pear, but I'll tell you what, I like the way the Stars are playing, and they are going, to me right now, as good as Tampa has been, I think I like the Stars to take over Lord Stanley this year.
I'm coming to grips with this because there's a couple things that happen here. When you play a team in the postseason, you instantly don't like them as far as a fan base. A number of people took to social media yesterday, since Vegas was eliminated, said, you know what? Yeah, they were cocky. It came back to bite them. And I don't think, and everyone's free to have their opinion, I don't think they're that wrong. I think there was a confidence slash cockiness, and that's the fine line that Vegas had. And maybe we take the chirping that came early on in that series towards the Canucks and go, man, that was offside. Just play the game. Mark Stone is not that guy. I think Riley's that guy. I mean, no, Reeves is that guy. Don't think Shea Theodore is that guy, nor is Robin Leonard or their head coach. But I do believe, and they said as much yesterday, even in defeat, it was like, man, we didn't come here for this. Riley's missing. I've never been on a better hockey team. That said, I do look forward to, I would suspect today Tampa Bay gets through. I understand what you like about Dallas. They get it from everybody, and they work hard. But I'm curious to see the faster pace, I think, that Tampa has been allowed to play out east if they get slowed down, if they get grinded down by Dallas. Stars did it to Vegas. Why couldn't they do it to Tampa Bay? This has a team that for the last couple of years has kind of been waiting to see if they could get it done. And mentally, I just thought this is a group of guys that really like putting on some shorts in January and going to the rink and hanging in the sunshine where there hasn't been a lot of pressure for them to get to a Stanley Cup final last 20 years. Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way, James, that, yeah, maybe this is Dallas' year.
Well, just think, if somebody said to you 30 years ago in the early 1990s, one of these days, Dallas and Tampa will collide for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Is that good for the game right now, though? Like, there's no way NHL head offices, we've talked about it before, what they have going in the NBA with big markets and where we could be going with the NHL here, okay. Yet there were people in Dallas at the arena watching the game, celebrating the win. Not a lot of them, but there were people there. They had a viewing party.
Well, I would say, and look, I mean, that might be a test case of what the new world might look like for the foreseeable future for the National Hockey League, right? With 2,500 fans spaced out, in a venue of 18,000 seats. Look, the Dallas Stars are built for this, and you can question whether or not you think that the Dallas Stars can keep up to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Look at what they've done. Like, look at the run that they've gone on here. And look, I think they'll ultimately need, Anton Khudobin to continue to deliver the goods like he has done. But, that was a really good Vegas team that outshot the Stars in every game except the opener, where they finished even in shots in game one. What they have done to take care of the Calgary Flames, to roll the way that they have en route to the Stanley Cup, and, man, to take out the Avs. Like, this hasn't been an easy road for the Dallas Stars. Like, they have shown that they are good. And there are a lot of players on this team, this Dallas Stars team, that I think we looked at. I was guilty of saying, man, oh, man, boy, did the Sharks make a smart play on not committing all that money to Joe Pavelski. Well, Joe Pavelski has come to life in these playoffs. You look at Corey Perry, who was $1.5 million and looked like he was done in the regular season. How good has Corey Perry been? And just showing that net front presence. Like, Corey Perry has just been salty in these playoffs. Guys have stepped up. You look at so many guys in ELC contracts, players that are making under $1 million for the Dallas Stars pair, and guys who have contributed. And this is where I think this is where the Canucks need to find a way to get to, where you saw it with Hughes and Pettersson, but not much beyond them. But man, the unsung heroes that are stepping up, right? You know, Miro Heiskanen. I mean, this kid's a superstar, or at least a perennial all-star for the foreseeable future with how good he is in his ELC. But, you know, Kiviranta, I mean, where he's come from virtually nowhere and has had a great playoff. You know, you look at Faxa, you look at Hintz, they're all under $1 million. You know, Perry, Alexiak, both under $2 million. And then your goaltenders, and this has got to give a whole lot of, consideration for general managers around the league. You know, Bishop and Hudobin, they're each at $2.5 million. Like, God, you're getting so much value from guys beyond the top-heavy players, where Jamie Benn has gotten better as the playoffs have gone on. Tyler Seguin hasn't been great. But, man, everybody is on board for the most part with this Dallas Stars team, which is why they're off to the Cup final.
Which is interesting, because after a team gets eliminated, as Vegas did yesterday, very seldom do you talk about a player in a series that was involved before. But here's what Peter DeBoer had to say about a member of the Vancouver Canucks and how he tied it into the series that they played against Dallas.
You know, you have to credit Dallas for part of that, for sure, and Dallas's goaltender for sure. You know, there's no doubt that the last couple games of the Vancouver series against Demko probably rattled our confidence a little bit in that area as a group. Honestly, up to that point.
Isn't that interesting? It's almost like Peter DeBoer still doesn't believe. Everybody from Vegas is waking up this morning going, how did we lose? Like, how did we lose in five games to that? So we talked about the mental toughness of Gutkowski and you know, missing three field goals. And, oh, my goodness, he's got to do it again. Usually that's why hockey games are 60 minutes. That's why series are best of seven, because it will even out and the best team will win. I do believe Vegas is going home going, they're not as good as we are. They're not as good as we are. Well, they beat you, right? And Hudobin maybe had the greatest 3 weeks of his life. I mean, as much hockey as he played, but they beat you. And, you know, I'm starting to wonder, you know, you saw it last year. St. Louis Blues get rolling before the playoffs, move from last place in January and celebrate a Stanley Cup win. It's just been a long time. I think you got to go back to the Chicago Blackhawks 2012, when the best team after the regular season was the best team hoisting the Stanley Cup. It just doesn't happen. And I know we talk about, you know, NFL or CFL, get on the roll at the right time. It's tough to get on a roll when you need to win 16 games. But that's exactly what's happening with the Dallas Stars. They fight for 60 minutes. They come from behind. They don't quit. And I just think their confidence right now is going to run into a Tampa Bay team that's kind of cocky too. Going, all right, oh, you know, we're going to have to play hard. What's the score in the Bucs game? I liked it from John Cooper on Sunday. But we could be into a pretty good collision course and a very good final in what's been a crazy 2020 tournament.
Now, do you believe that Demko really impacted the Golden Knights?
I'm surprised. Like, I don't know if I can remember a coach talking about a player from a previous series affecting his team. Now, if he did, do you not go, that's mentally weak? Like, do you not go, man, you didn't really? He bothered you? You were thinking, that's why I'm surprised that he would go to Thatcher Demko. I mean, obviously, we saw Stone. He was trying to shake the cobwebs off after shaking Thatcher Demko's hand.
They stopped scoring in game number five, where Demko came in for an injured Jacob Markstrom. And, you know, the Golden Knights, outside of those two empty netters in the dying minutes of game seven, you know, they mustered two goals in three games against Thatcher Demko in those games, right? And then you carry over into this, like, they struggled to score. Like, they had a hard time. But I would say this, like, Vegas had good looks in this series. They had plenty of them. Hudobin just made some great saves. Now, you can ultimately say, hey, your shooter's got to score. Like, you're committed to all this money. Like, your guy's got to deliver. But they had their looks. Like, there's not a lot I would change in terms of the way Vegas played. They just got beat.
And with those looks, James, when you talk about Demko and you talk about them scoring, it wasn't, oh, he had a wide open net on a one-timer and he fanned on it.
No, there was like none of that. No, no, no.
It's like Brock Besser in that 2-on-1. Brock Besser got stopped by Robin Leonard. Should he have picked a corner? No, he got as much as he could in the puck and he was stopped. So that's, I don't know. Like, you're not changing anything in this Vegas team, are you? Like, I'd go, okay, guys, see everybody whenever we gather, December or January, we're set to go next year.
But goaltending. Boy. That's what I wonder. You know, what is the end game? I will say this. Was Robin Leonard bad? No, but was he great? Like, you know, he got beat in that series. You know, and some of those goals I think you would look at and go, oh, man, are we ready to commit $6-7 million a year? And then here's the other thing. You're still committed for two more years to Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, is that relationship repairable based on what played out over the last month? Right? Like with the Alan Walsh, his Marc-Andre Fleury's agent with the sword through the back. You know, is that a relationship that's repairable? Can you move Fleury in his mid-30s at $7 million? Man, like that's where the Golden Knights, that's the questions I wonder about Vegas.
That's the decision they'll have to make. I do think they would have to do some serious things to repair. It would be strange if you give the reins to Robin Leonard and don't sign him. Now, he can hear from everybody else, too. Maybe there's others. Robin Leonard's case last year after the year he had on Long Island and he can't find a job, essentially, and goes to Chicago on a one-year deal. I like the man. I hope he gets something that gives him some term. I don't know if it's in Vegas, because do you sign him and handcuff yourself?
Well,
or how many people are lining up for Fleury at this point? I don't think a lot, right?
If you're a general manager, are you convinced you want to go 5 years with Robin Leonard after that?
No. No, I think I'm looking at going, can I get a couple? Look at the goalies that just beat me. You got one team that's questioning whether they signed big money for the guy who was hurt, but you got stymied by a guy on his making $1 million a year in Demko. You got beat by a guy who's been a journeyman backup and is 34 years old. So how important is that goalie position? And it wasn't like you were defending. You had the puck in the other people's zone the whole time. I just think that goaltending position, like Carey Price doesn't have a lot of people at the company. You know, if Price is calling Bobrovsky to go for dinner, there's not a lot of them in the club anymore. And I don't know if they'll go there that way. All right. I just think the structure of building teams is changing a little bit.
Do you have an issue with how the game ended?
I have a big issue with how it ended. And so did Peter DeBoer. You brought this rule into place back in like 2005, and it makes absolutely no sense, because you came out of the lockout to try and make sure, okay, well, let's add a little more offense. You have to change it. You have to change the fact the rule was there so players can't shoot the puck over the glass. I understand that, because, James, we're old enough to remember. Guys, just flip it out. If it's not off the glass, put it into 20th row and give us a break. There is no way that White Cloud had any intent. That's not a shooting motion. You got to look at it as just like, is that a kicking motion to score a goal? Here's what DeBoer had to say about another guy who a lot of people said, wow, who's he? He's a good young defenseman.
Well, I just feel terrible for the kid. You know, it's such a shitty penalty to begin with. And like, not on him, just, you know, to be for that type of penalty to decide a game, you know, just, it doesn't make sense to me. But, you know, for him, he's got nothing to hang his head about. He played his ass off and played big and played heavy and played big minutes for us. And, you know, he's got a bright future ahead of him here. And, you know, he's got nothing to be ashamed of.
Interesting. You know, Dallas Stars won their only Stanley Cup with a foot in the crease, which was kind of a rule that a lot of people hated. And
that
now did, they're in the
didn't
Stanley
cost
Cup
Vegas the series,
because
man.
Of another rule.
That didn't cost Vegas the series. Like, I don't have a problem with that rule. I actually don't mind it. And it's there. Was it intentional on White Cloud's part? No, but I the rule's there. I don't mind it. I haven't had a problem with it for the most part since it's come in. But that did not cost the Vegas Golden Knights the series, pair. Like, they lost in five games. Like, they blew a 2-0 lead in the third period, giving up not one but two goals. You know, Alex Tuck taking a penalty with 5 minutes to go in the game. Like, you know, that forces the overtime. You know, yes, White Cloud gives them a power play opportunity in the OT when, he, you know, the puck goes out. But That did not cost them the series. They lost 4-1. Like, it wasn't one moment in this series. Like, Dallas was the better team. Like, they won 4 games. Vegas won just one. You know, in years past, you can look at last year in the Cody Eakin play that ultimately gave the 5-minute major for San Jose to get back into it. You know, you can say, man, that's a weird way to lose. This year, Vegas, the expectations were for them Stanley Cup or bust, and they busted in the Western Final.
One play does not change a series. Completely agree. But what it does do is put a microscope on the game and what you have to fix in certain situations. And I do think the NHL has to look at that and go, you know, that's not the right way to have our final play. Do we have to revise that rule? And I hope the Board of Governors, when they next meet, go, okay, let's figure that out. How do we change the wording? Is it with the intention to shoot the puck over the glass? And do we give the opportunity for the rest to review? I remember the Canucks got caught in one of their series too, that it deflected off a stick and they didn't see it. So I do think, because everyone watches this, they go, okay, let's just revise it. I completely agree with you. One penalty, one goal doesn't change a series. Now, you can go, well, they ended it because of the power play, but it should change, just like we've seen in the NFL with pass interference against New Orleans. All right, that was big enough. The stage was big enough. Can we tinker with the rule so that doesn't happen again? Because there was no way there was intent to knock that puck over the glass. Didn't change the series, but I think they'll change that rule a little bit.
All right, we'll get into the Vancouver Canucks coming up at the bottom of the hour. He's Perry Solkowski. I'm James Cebulski, and this right now is Now You Know.
We're dropping knowledge this early in the morning.
I am smart. S-M-R-T.
This is Now You Know on the starting lineup. Here's James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
Parent news coming down in the last, hour or so that there is a new head coach in Washington, and it sounds like Peter Laviolette has signed a reported 3-year deal to become the new head coach of the Capitals, a team that has flamed out in round one of the last two Stanley Cup playoffs after winning the Cup in 2018. They are committed to a veteran core, and they are looking to a veteran coach to try to get the most out of that veteran core.
Championship in 2006 with Carolina. I wonder this, James. Before they hire the coach, how much input does the star player get? Like, don't you think they go, what do we need, Ovi? Okay, we got rid of Todd. Todd didn't work. You had the right guy in Barry Trotz. So Laviolette takes over from Trotz in Nashville. It works there. I don't mind Peter Laviolette. I think it's interesting the dynamics they have in Washington. You can't bring a young guy in. Didn't work before. So Laviolette gets the gig, gets a very good hockey team. I don't know if it's that much different from what he inherits in Nashville, and he never got in Nashville. He got him to a Stanley Cup Finals once. So I like the move. I'm curious what you get paid, because I don't think big paydays are there for coaches right now either.
Well, I mean, Jeff Ward probably not getting what Peter Laviolette is getting in Washington, and I'm sure that had a played a hand in the Flames' decision ultimately on that. Laviolette's had some success. Let's see if it works. I mean, the Canucks tried that strategy with Tortorella, with a veteran coach, back in 2013, and that went boom. So we'll see if there's still a lot left in that core. I still like that core, and I think there's still a lot left. I mean, Ovi showed that he was still chasing the rock at Richard, so I think there's still a lot left. You know, Nick Backstrom getting hurt in the playoffs didn't certainly help that team. And they got to figure out what to do goaltending-wise here going forward as well. Now you know.
If you don't know, now you know.
Hey, we loved our first week of the NFL, but Sunday night, not as many people were watching as you might have assumed. Early results of the ratings say that the game for Sunday night was down 20% in prime time. So we'll see. I'll be curious. You know, James, we had talked about DraftKings on the air when they came up, and you could buy stock in DraftKings. I think it opened at $16. Now it's in the 40s. Hey, they're not going to games. You figured they'd be watching on TV. We'll get the real numbers this morning. But I watched my share of NFL football. I was flipping back and forth last night. I would think that football will be fine, and even the ratings could be bigger than ever. And don't be surprised if we do see the NFL change some games and play the odd Saturday night, maybe even the odd Friday night that was suggested before the season started. to take advantage of the fact that people can't go to games.
Well, you're talking about the U.S. ratings, to just to clarify for
yes,
for the
just
audience,
the U.S.
right?
ratings.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in the U.S., I don't know. Like the one thing I keep wondering is, you've got millions of people that are collecting CERB here in Canada, and millions of people that are out of work in the United States. Like I do wonder how many people have maybe cut the cord on cable.
Oh, geez.
When the rise of streaming services, like, it's a real thing. I don't know
what's
how much
cheap,
that's
what's cheaper, cable or streaming?
Yeah, I do wonder how much of a thing it is. I mean, I've heard of a few people that over the course of the last few months, they've made the decision to cut the cord on cable. And how many people are not watching cable as much? And you had summer, and, you know, I do wonder how much of a thing that is, because the NFL and typically the Dallas Cowboys in primetime is a ratings winner. Like, they're typically the most watched show every week. So, it's not nothing.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Also, we got a Game 7 tonight in the NBA. And for the second straight round, you got the Denver Nuggets attempting to come back from a 3-1 deficit to win a series. Game 7 tonight against the LA Clippers. The Kawhi Leonard-led LA Clippers. Winners take on the Lakers in the Western Final. You know who the NBA's pulling for. You know they want the Battle of LA. So that goes later on today. Celtics and Heat also tipping off the Eastern Final today as well. All right, 25 minutes after 6 o'clock here on this Tuesday morning. He's Perry Sulkowski. I'm James Cebulski. The Vancouver Canucks, some interesting comments from Sportsnet hockey insider Elliot Friedman on the offseason game plan for the Vancouver Canucks. We'll dive into that next right here on your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
I gotta give it to the f***ing Russian machine.
We're not going home!
Now more of the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Sulkowski on Sportsnet 650.
He's got a little Brizgalov,
you know,
in him.
I don't know if it's stereotyping or discrimination, but, you know, just listening in that Russian accent from Hudobin screaming, "We're not going home!" It just sounds villainous. It sounds villainous, and I love every moment of it. Nice moment that the Dallas Stars shared on social media with the team inside the locker room. We haven't even touched on the fact that Rick Bowness, 65-year-old Rick Bowness, yeah, who was a former assistant here in Vancouver, Pair, is off to the Stanley Cup Final. A guy who was the coach of the Ottawa Senators when I first broke into the business. And, man, anywhere he has gone, anybody that's dealt with him will tell you, that is one of the nicest people you will find in the hockey world.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's tough for listeners to go, "Oh, nice guy." Well, it just is. I mean, I don't care what your workplace is, who you know, he's just that guy. And Bieksa said he had a great story yesterday talking about not just Rick, but his wife. His wife was kind of the coach of all the young wives, going, "Okay, here's how you can handle this situation." But that family has traveled all over the place chasing a Stanley Cup, and that will be the moment. If you were deciding what you want for your image, you got it with Ovechkin a couple years ago. You know, it might have been, didn't have that great Bohm. I guess Bohmeister lifting the cup might have been. But Rick Bowness, for an awful lot of people around the hockey world, will see loads of emotion. If he gets to grab a Stanley Cup, you chase your dream that long, you move your family everywhere, and they are so supportive of you, and he gets that chance, you're right. It's the best story that's out there. For the possible win. Redemption for John Cooper and the Lightning, nice. But when a guy waits that long, it's the Boston Red Sox breaking a curse if he can get it done.
Yeah, a lot of people on the island this morning excited the fact that the island's son, Jamie Benn, who was also off to the Stanley Cup Final, the captain of the Dallas Stars. Long journey for him to get there, but he is in the Stanley Cup Final. And I want to bring it back to the Canucks here for a second, because yesterday Elliot Friedman appeared on our sister station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan in Calgary, and shared this nugget when it came to the discussion with respect to the Canucks situation and the big three of free agents or pending unrestricted free agents. The money team, if you will. I know Floyd Mayweather called that with his management team the money team, as in 10 of Markstrom to Foley. Here's what Friedman had to say.
I think it's going to be fascinating. I think they're going to take runs at Markstrom, Tanev, and Toffoli and see if they can do it. And that'll affect some of their decisions elsewhere. You know, I think that depending on what those three do, if they can get those guys back, it affects the decisions that they make up and down their roster. Guys like Virtanen, do they have to do any buyouts? Are they guys they're going to have to move or non-qualify to make things work? So I think all those are going to be determining factors, but I've heard there's never an issue there when it comes to can they spend to the cap if they need to.
Yeah, and so we heard that over the weekend with respect to spending to the cap. But, you know, what's not to like with this idea for the Canucks trying to keep those three assets and veteran assets at that? You know, and at least depending on the price point. The problem is people keep screaming that the Canucks have these crazy cap problems. And in a year from now, yes, the Canucks do need to ensure that there's enough cap space cleared up for both Pettersson and Hughes, because there is absolutely zero point and zero appetite on anybody's part to see any sort of haggling with your franchise players. But right now, the Canucks have just under $15 million in cap space for the offseason, okay? And you have to figure out what you got to do with Markstrom, Tanev, Toffoli, Mott, Virtanen, Levo, Stetcher, Fantenberg, Gaudette. So you have to prioritize, right? Prioritize. I mean, do I think that the Canucks will reel all three back in? Not likely, but we'll see what the appetite on both sides are. Again, this comes back to prioritizing. Now, for next season, you've got almost $20-plus million cleared in cap space. So there is salary cap relief on the way, but you also need players beyond just Pettersson and Quinn. Money will be there and space for both Quinn and Pettersson. So what now? You have to prioritize if you're the Vancouver Canucks. Now, Benning has already gone on record when he said on this radio station last week that he isn't interested in moving draft picks for cap relief when he was asked directly about that on Reach Deep last week.
Contract. I'm not doing that. I'm not in that market. I'm not looking, you know, I'm not going to be giving up first and second round picks to lose money. You know, we'll have to figure out, you know, a different way. But, you know, if we can, you know, we have to make decisions on maybe some of our RFA players. And those are conversations that I'm going to have with the coaches and our hockey ops group this next week. And that's, you know, things that we're going to have to look at to maybe, you know, move out some money. We'll see.
So, like Jim Benning just said, essentially prioritize. Look, the Canucks have reached a point where it is now time to turn the page on some and find out if these prospects that we've been hearing so much about for the last several years are finally ready to show their stuff on the main stage. Ole Olevi, it's time. Is Brogan Rafferty ready? Is Zach McEwen? More kids will find their way into the roster, and hopefully in another year from now, you've got Pod Colson and Hoglander ready to jump into prime time as well. Case in point, the Dallas Stars. Look at how many contributors that are making under $1 million right now that are helping push this team to the Stanley Cup final. So from a Canucks standpoint, shoot your shot, because everyone is replaceable. We have certainly learned that in the hockey landscape and the baseball landscape for that matter. Gretzky moved. So did Gordie Howe. So did Bobby Orr. Jaromir Jagr. Pavel Bure. Trevor Linden. Man, look at the sporting landscape. Joe Montana. Michael Jordan. LeBron James. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Will Chamberlain, and maybe most recently, Tom Brady. If they can all move them, so too can Jake Virtanen and Troy Stetcher ultimately be turned the page on them. Prioritize your assets and shoot your shot from a Vancouver Canucks standpoint going forward. I like the play trying to keep all three. I don't think it's likely, but I like the fact that they're going to try to keep all three.
Wow, you just gave Jake Virtanen and Troy Stetcher, you put him in a category with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Wayne Gretzky and Tom Brady. Listen, you're moving those two guys. You're just moving bit parts. Nothing against them. They're not making any big alterations if Troy Stetcher and Jake Virtanen are not here, James. Like, yeah, okay, I think they've kind of – all we're saying is you've got three guys that you're really interested in signing, And a Troyce Dechter, unfortunately, you're going to have to move him because he makes too much money. And Jake Virtanen's had, 3 years to try and figure it out, and he hasn't proven it. So, you know, sorry, fan base. You're going to have to learn to live without a player that you really had a love-hate relationship with. I don't think they get all three. I will say you can use that the move of the Gretzky and the big moves with their goalie, with their MVP, because it would look strange if the MVP of your season is not back. But I do think that is the biggest move they're wrestling with. They'll have money. You know, I was looking back at the 2011 team as to how many changes they made. You know, they brought in when they made that Stanley Cup run from 2010, a Ham Hughes, a Rafi Torres. They got rid of a Steve Bernier. Teams are always making changes. We just discussed Vegas. And here's the thing. What do you change on that? Did they just fall short because there's not a lot of room for movement? But you always see some. I don't think the Canucks get all three. I'm questioning whether or not their priority has changed, or at least the gap has changed from the front runner being Jacob Markstrom to the fact that Tyler Toffoli, they feel, might be a bigger and a more important fit as they move forward, seeing what a Pavelski did, seeing what a Corey Perry did, understanding that a winger who's 28, 29, 30, 31, if you get him for 4 years and has a Stanley Cup ring, is a piece that is as important as what they might be able to find in goal, when if their team gets better, the goalie doesn't have to make as many saves. I don't think they get all three. I wonder if the priority list is changing a little bit.
I would agree. It's hard not to think how things have played out, right? Like look at from a goaltending standpoint, right? Did anybody anticipate Thatcher Demko to play the way he did, Pair, and for Jacob Markstrom to break down the way he did in the last 3 weeks? You know, and Anton Hudobin, and you know, is the Hudobin effect also something to consider at $2.5 million? Like, he's going to get a raise this offseason. I don't know what sort of term he's going to look like, maybe 2 years or something along those lines. But you're right. I think you can't help but wonder if the priorities in the Vancouver Canucks front office has changed now with their approach. They want to keep Jacob Markstrom. I think we all agree with that. But at what's the threshold now?
Yeah, and I think the threshold may have changed. Right? I think the term and the restrictive of what we're going to have to protect you, I think they have more clout as an organization than they did 2 months ago. And that's fair, because I think we've talked. Everybody has some muscle to flex. Canucks sound do. Jacob certainly does. But, you know, I think being injured doesn't help his cause. I mean, he hasn't been the healthiest of goalies. But I also think this hockey team, you know, you need a goalie why did they bring in Ryan Miller? You know, the thought was, hey, we've got a young hockey team. And it's going to do a lot more for us to have a good goalie back there to keep us in hockey games in the third period so they learn how to play in those tight games, rather than kind of being weak in goal and going, we're going into the third period, we're down by 3 goals. That was the mindset. Now, you always need a good goalie, but I don't know if Jacob Markstrom is going to have to make as many big saves as he is. They got better defensively, and the better your hockey team is, the less work your goalie has to do. But I do think the priority seems to be shifting a little bit to Tyler Toffoli being, okay, can we get him? And maybe it's Toffoli playing that card that he did on Friday, going, hey, if everyone thinks, I want to be the Vancouver Canucks. I want to stay here. I want to find out from them. So we'll see who gets signed, because if we had a press release come to us going, the Canucks have announced the signing, I wonder if people wouldn't be going, boy, I hope it's Toffoli. Or it better be Markstrom, because I think this is turning into a Demko town all of a sudden.
in a town that is known for its goalie controversies and conversations over the years, yes, it does feel like it's a Demko town suddenly these days in a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately world. It is the subject of our poll question today, by the way. As the Canucks try to sign Markstrom, Tanev, and Toffoli, what's most likely? Sign all three, keep one, keep only Markstrom, or keep Toffoli and Tanev? Cast your ballot on our Twitter site at Sportsnet 650. 650, 650. Love to get your take on that as well. Todd Bertuzzi will join the conversation coming up at 7 o'clock. Plus, we'll also dive in as week one comes to a close in the National Football League. A look at the Monday night or duds last night. All of it still ahead right here on your home of Vancouver hockey. We're Sportsnet 650.
This is The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
All right, 6:49 on this Tuesday morning. Yeah, smoke still in the forecast. High expected up to 18. And never did I think I would see the day I would be as excited as I was for rain yesterday, Perry.
Yeah, I was unprepared for it because it didn't. You couldn't really see the sky. Go, well, hang on, that's what the skies look like for 2 days. But yeah, they get. We got the rain. It appears a little like not as much smoke. I know I saw some pictures of downtown Vancouver, so it's breaking up a little bit. Yeah, we needed some rain. Are you having the issues with moths? Like, we've got moths everywhere up here.
Somebody else remarked that yesterday. There were moths everywhere. Nothing extreme over here. No.
So that's
just a zombie apocalypse situation.
Hey, I don't want to go, and we know last year when things were a little bit normal in our building at 650, although you weren't a part of it, keto was the big thing. Everyone went on the keto diet. Mm-hmm. I think Reach probably led the way. I did my bit. The boss remains on it. I'm not going to say I'm full on with keto, but I've started to be a little smarter with what I've eat, and I've done it at a tough time, James. If anyone has had the Popeye chicken, crazy Popeye chicken sandwiches in the States, it was nuts. It was viral. People lining up around the block. They opened in Canada yesterday. They brought the chicken sandwiches up here. Like, Popeyes have been around. I don't know if they're any good, but I've got to check that out. And now I'm kind of in a situation where I can't. Text us at 650-650 if you've had Popeyes. What's your go-to? What's your go-to?
Well, tell me this: like you're jumping on a story right now that obviously was massive in the U.S. But there's like what, maybe three Popeye locations in, like, have you ever even been to a Popeyes before?
No, I haven't. No, but I would go.
And there's one in the Tri-Cities too.
There's one in Poco, I'm told.
Now you're pushing people to go. Like, I'll tell you this much: when I first, like, there was no Popeyes growing up in Ottawa. And when I first moved to Toronto in the late 90s, there was my parents, you know, we rented a U-Haul, they helped ship me out and out of the house, and, you know, they closed the door of my apartment and off they drive away, and all right, I'm on my own. As soon as they drove off, I went out the door, hopped on the TTC, which is the subway in Toronto, and took the train down to Yonge and Dundas Station. And where there was located, right across in the old Eaton Center, was a Popeye's chicken. And I was so excited. That was my first meal to have Popeye's chicken in Toronto at that time. And there was only one for the longest time, and they kind of got more and more. Like, there's, I think, three. I think there's one around, like, in South Surrey.
Someone just texted there's one in Abbotsford.
Yeah, okay, like, you know, I'm not driving out to Abbotsford, like, living in South Delta to get, other than maybe if I drove by it, but, like, again, like, there's very few. So for this, you know, if I had to choose between Popeyes and KFC, I would take Popeyes chicken.
So you're influenced by the craziness that you would want to try something. Like, what is that donut shop? Is it Cardam's or something downtown?
Well, there's Honey's Donuts, which is all the rage, right?
There's our Cartons, or someone will tell me that my daughter went to for her boyfriend's birthday. Goes, oh, I'm going to go down and get the donuts. Like, and they bring them back and they're good, but, you know, traveling 40 minutes to get a sandwich, I don't know. What was it down by you, that donut place that they still sell for kids? Someone texted in.
Tim Hortons.
They're all, no, it's not Tim Hortons. White box with green on it. You go usually see if soccer teams are there. They're just selling them outside. I'm always amazed they're selling donuts.
Oh, you're talking about
big lineup.
They were all the rage. Krispy Kreme.
They were the Krispy Kreme. Remember,
overrated.
Like, people, I literally knew people. What are you doing this weekend? Actually, we're gonna drive down. I thought it was in your area. We're gonna go get Krispy Kreme. I go, really? Like, that's your weekend? Yeah, we're gonna be waiting in line. Like, I'm not waiting in line for a long time, but I'm hitting someplace. If I'm driving by going, okay, what's the sandwich all about? It's like In-N-Out Burger. When you go to the States, you have an In-N-Out Burger, don't you, just because of publicity?
Hmm. Yeah, In-N-Out. I mean, there's certain burgers. Like, there's certain, depending on what part of the region geographically you're located, you would hit a, like, you know, when I'm down in the South, like in Texas, Whataburger. Like, for people that have been to the South, Whataburger. Underrated, you know, Steak and Shake. You know, Checkers, you know, those certain spots. Hardee's, if anybody had ever kind of driven through NASCAR country back in the day, you know, Hardee's was always kind of a good staple. I mean, I like my Popeyes, but I'm not driving 50K to go. I'm not that desperate to get fast food. You got one just down the street, man. You got to practice what you preach. If you're going to give them a five-minute infomercial, why don't you go eat it? Come
on. Scott in Calgary will buy some Popeyes. He says he'll buy us a chicken sandwich if we go to Calgary. I'm not going to Calgary. No, I'll try it. I just want to see. It's only been out for a day, and I'm just curious if anyone has had it, if it's all the rage. I'm glad maybe we got healthy people. And here's the thing. If you're bringing something like that out, isn't that poor marketing? You bring out fast food the day kids go full on back to school. Like, isn't that, not that I'm promoting fast food for kids, but don't you make that marketing move for the summer?
Well, you just promoted Popeyes for 5 minutes, and then you ended it with a, I'm not going to eat it.
Well, I might just have the chicken. I know. I want people to tell me, don't you go to TripAdvisor? This is like Fast Food Advisor.
No.
I want people to say, don't believe the hype, Perry. It's not that good. It's a chicken sandwich. I wouldn't have believed the hype. In-N-Out Burger wasn't as good as I thought. I was asking a cop in San Jose, hey, man, is there an In-N-Out Burger somewhere? We drove 15 minutes just to find it. I go, really, that's it? Philly cheese sandwich. Okay, that's that good. I'm in Philly. I'll have it. It's not great.
All right, Topper Tuesday is going to join us coming up in just a matter of moments. 650, 650. A lot of people jumping in on this conversation here. Scott, I will take a free piece of chicken next time I'm in Calgary. I'll hit you up. Yes, and there's one opening up in Richmond as well. And somebody also messaging in saying, I've traveled from Surrey to Commercial Drive, DL Chicken Shack. So that is passion. That is commitment. But that was that on the way to work? Like, that's not, is that going out of your way or not? Topper Tuesday joins us next. Perry, go get some chicken right here on Sportsnet 650.
Let's get it going. It's time to get up.
Klingberg from the line, right side. Gurianov shoots and scores. Dennis Gurianov with a one-timer for the right circle beats Robin Leonard left side, and the Dallas Stars are going to the Stanley Cup Final for the first time in 20 years.
These guys are here to break it all down.
Snap, set, kick. Good!
Let's have a little fun and make you a winner.
We're not going home!
This is The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
7:03. People continue. Cebulski, Solkowski, people continuing to jump into this conversation, Perry, that you kickstarted about fried chicken. Keith texting in at 650, 650 saying Popeyes has been in Port Coquitlam for a while. KFC you later. Popeyes is great. So John,
well,
also reminding you to...
Two worlds health. Collided, James, just in that commercial break, because, you know, my family's up and at 'em. We do a little shuffle in the house. My daughter, I said, hey, I was mentioning that donut place. And she goes, Cardam's? And then my wife comes up. She goes, you know what? I was on the scale yesterday. Enough. No more terrible eating. This is crazy. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going, really? Like, I was quite enjoying the conversation I was just having with everybody about fast food. So, no. We're the two worlds collided, but thank you. Some people saying don't believe the hype.
Yep.
You got to try it for yourself.
Somebody else mentioning Popeyes on 64th and 144th. I've had it. It's overrated. Don't believe the hype, Perry. It's not all that good out in Abbotsford. So there you go. Hey, I got to give a quick happy birthday, happy 50th birthday to Gino Ogic, the Maniwaki Mauler. I ran into Gino yesterday. I was having lunch down at Pat Quinn's yesterday, and there was Gino enjoying. It was his first time out in almost a year, not really having a chance to get out, obviously, with his health. He's got to be mindful with COVID and all that. And so shout out to Marcia and Lee, and happy birthday to Gino Ogic, who was a nice little social distance lunch.
Yeah, still as beloved as any athlete probably in this
season. Oh, yeah, and everybody still knows who Gino is. Like, it's pretty funny. So let's bring in Todd Bertuzzi, who I know would still, here in 2020, would not mess. And as big as Bird is, I know you're not messing with Gino Ogic.
No, I love Gino. Gino was one of the kindest, nicest, scariest dudes I came across. And when I first came to Vancouver, he was awesome, especially with knowing that his buddy Trevor left, and a lot of his other guys that he played a long time with left. He was very accommodating, very generous, and kind soul. I'm glad that he was out and about and doing better.
Yeah, you know what? He really is, and it doesn't matter what generation you talked about. You always talk about the tough guys back when the game was drop the gloves, and then you always say, by the way, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And Gino was that, you know, he's that kind of guy. As mean and scary as he is, off the ice, gentle bear, right? Just kind.
Yeah. He had a big heart. You know what? He would always go out of his way to sign autographs, to be with the fans. You know, he was a people's person. He was a fan's person. That's why they loved him so much. And the fans respected the fact that he'd have to go out there and fight each and every night. But at the same time, don't discredit his skill. He could put the puck in the net and he could make plays, even though that his job was more of dropping the gloves and putting the puck in the net. He still had some skill and over to, remember when he played with Pavel. You have to have a somewhat kind of skill set and all that and over to play with Pavel. And I think did he score like 15 goals one year?
I think, yeah, he had close to 20. I think it was 16 or 18 goals the one year. You're right. Semenko was kind of that one year, wasn't he, with the Oilers as well?
Yeah, I think Dino was a better hockey player than Dave Semenko. You know, I think Gino had some skill before he got going, that's for sure, right?
Yeah, Ogic, the year that went to the Cup Final, Ogic had 16 goals that year in 93-94. The Dallas Stars are off to the Stanley Cup Final, Bert. I think this team has been an eye-opener for a lot of people, but this team, you know, you look at the vets, you look at the kids, everybody's kind of meeting in the middle here.
Yeah, and they're doing it without Sagan being at his best, which is impressive. I'm not saying that Sagan has been terrible, but you know how I sugarcoat. I don't like ripping on players, and I won't rip on players. So I'll let you guys do that. I'll just address that I don't think he's been at his best, and they're still doing what they're doing. Mind you, their goaltender's been outstanding. Their young defensive core has been outstanding. Their puck movement. And then let's not forget, man, it takes a captain and a leader to strap on a pair and carry the load, and that's exactly what Jamie Benn's doing. I saw that at a young age with him, the fact that I thought he could be a leader, and just his overall game. He's a throwback to the old-school power forward. Can fight, can score, can play make, can back check, can play center, can take face-offs. So it's... he's a full combo, and you know what? Well deserved, man. This squad has been under heavy criticism from their ownership for the past couple of years, and rightfully so. When you write a paycheck that big for some of these players and all that, if you're underachieving and not advancing and all that, and he has the right to speak up. Mind you, I don't like when the owner speaks up. He should just write the check and allow the GM and all that to handle the situation, but. They've really come together. I just think it's a blend of youth. Don't underestimate how great of a pickup Corey Perry was. I think he's the only guy on the roster with a ring. He was a Hart Trophy winner. I think he was a league scoring champion too. And he's learned his role. He's a lot like when I was near the end. It's get the puck to the good players and get to the front of the net and create as much havoc as he can. I thought that and just his presence in the locker room with the younger kids. And then obviously with the Vancouver team being out, the closest connection we have is Bones, and I love Bones. He was my coach in Long Island, and then obviously cross paths with him a lot, and I love the man. I can't say that I ever had one bad encounter with him. And to see his excitement on the bench was awesome to see. And then obviously I got a relationship with Jim Neal from Detroit days, and I'm very excited and happy for him that that this is happening.
And that said, Bert, and full credit, but it almost seems like, and, you know, we saw it when the Canucks won the three games in this series, that even this morning the Golden Knights are waking up and going, we were the better hockey team. Do players have that feeling, even though you just lost a series, and go, no, we were actually the better hockey team. I can't believe we're not playing anymore.
Yeah, it does happen. But at the same time, our sport is about pointing fingers, not necessarily the players and all that, but the media and anyone who's calling the sport. It's about pointing out why they lost and where they lost. And I tell you right now, and I know Peter pretty well. He was an excellent coach with the Kitchener Rangers. I know him personally. But I'm pretty sure he's waking up feeling a little bit of heat and a little bit of finger pointing at some of the decisions he made. And you look at that roster, like, man, they're deep. And you got Theodore, who is having a Norris-like playoffs. He's going to be your next Norris Trophy winner. But the way he was rolling, but in the end, they just didn't get it done offensively. And they couldn't keep the puck out of their net, and they couldn't keep up with Dallas's pressure. And but at the same time, I don't think it's a team that you can dismantle. You got to figure out what's going to go on. And I really, really believe that wherever Fleury goes, he's so loved by all of his teammates and his staff and all this kind of thing. And whenever something's taken away from him, you tend to see shoot hit the fan, man. Like, it doesn't go well. Sometimes it does, but I don't know whether the players were divided in the fact of, like, we want Fleury or Leonard, but it just seemed that it wasn't right when the decision was made to go with Leonard.
So is that repairable then? Like, what's the end game now? And the other thing,
I don't think it's repairable with Fleury, to be honest with you. I think as a true professional, and I don't know him personally, I know through other players and all that he's absolutely loved, just a first class guy.
Yeah.
That sometimes that being done to a player who's supposed to be the franchise player and for no reason not getting the starting job because his stats and his performance showed that he's capable of doing it. And then obviously with his agent coming out, and I don't see this being repaired. I see him moving on, but there's going to be a lot of internal questions that GM ownership and the coaching staff are going to have to figure out.
Yeah, but their problem becomes this, Bert, is we're sitting here talking about a Jacob Markstrom, and would you pay $6 million for Markstrom, who's 30? You know, it's easy to say you see Marc-Andre Fleury moving on, and I can understand why the dynamics that are there. But the fact is, he's 35 years old and making $7 million. Like, how many people are lining up for that? Like, I don't know how they fix the problem.
Yeah, I think there's more than what you think, Per. I think there's probably two or three teams. Don't tell me Edmonton wouldn't lick their chops to have him for a couple good years with a very, very service backup. But I think there's more than what you think. A guy like him with his track record and his performance, even at this age, if anything, he's going to be pretty freaking healthy going into next year because he's been fresh.
Yeah.
I don't see him not moving on and going to another team. I think there'll be at least two or three teams that line up to try to go after him.
And are you as inclined to want to commit to dollars with Robin Leonard?
Well, we've had this discussion even with the Vancouver part, and I told you, seeing some of the huge deals with some of the other goaltenders, Bobrovsky, the price one is paid off because price has been great. Their team hasn't been built to go longer, you know what I mean? As far as size, as far as chemistry, as far as getting it done. So you look at the price contract, yeah, he deserves that, man. He holds the fort each and every night. But I think we're going into a new era of hockey where every team's going to look for two guys and try to complement their pay value equally. That's the way I see it trending.
Is the hockey different out east? Will Tampa Bay, if they win tonight, be stymied by Dallas? How do you see that playing out if they start up on Thursday as the Stanley Cup final?
I see Tampa catching Dallas in quicksand for the first couple games. Can they keep it close early? They're just so dynamic, Tampa, the way they move the puck. The way their D get up in the rush. Hey, they got great, solid, tough D, man, like Hedman. You don't think Hedman's going to cause a problem for Sege, Ben, those other, Radulov, those kind of guys? He's a big unit, man, and he covers a lot of space. And with how fast Tampa is built and how fast they play and with how this bubble's going on with the amount of games and all that kind of stuff, if Dallas gets caught in quicksand early, it could be a quick one, but they're well coached. They ended the series without any injuries and all that, from what I hear or have read. So I just think Tampa's just too fast, too dynamic, and too fresh.
Todd Bertuzzi with us here on Sportsnet 650. I want to bring it back to the home team here for a second. Sportsnet hockey insider Elliot Friedman was reporting yesterday that his sense is that the Canucks are going to take a legitimate shot at trying to re-up with the kind of the big three UFAs and Tanev, Markstrom, and Toffoli. What's the most likely scenario in your mind? Do you think they can reel in all three with the cap space? They've got about $15 million to play with. Like, do you see them being able to reel in all three, or maybe just one, maybe just two? Like, how do you see it?
Well, we spoke, I think, 2 weeks ago, and whenever you get eliminated and forget to the Eastern or Western semis and all that kind of stuff, you have to look internally of what you need to do. And I know we discussed it. I said, I don't know where this person is, but I do believe that they still need another big horse on D to contribute with to help complement Hughes. Is Tanev it? He plays hard, but I don't know if he is that 1A, 1B with Hughes. He's a huge number three, number four, who does everything well. I think they're going to take a hard look and realize that they're going to need maybe an injection of some new blood, maybe. I don't know for sure, but from what I looked on how they played and all that, they're a couple pieces away from advancing.
You just mentioned the value of a Corey Perry, Joel Pavelski. So, you know, Seaball and I were questioning, you know, we get the feeling that maybe the priorities have changed a touch. If you could only sign one of these two, Markstrom or Toffoli, which one do you want?
Yeah, you're kind of putting me on the spot as an ex-player to pick and choose between players.
Well,
yeah,
no, okay.
That's why we pay you.
I am, but that's why we called you. But what's more important, like having that top six bona fide scorer, or, you know, you've got a great goalie in Markstrom, but you kind of have a pretty good backup, obviously, as we've seen.
Yeah, but we just saw a small sample, and he played excellent, and he's a big frame. He's agile. But that position – That's a lot of wear and tear and all that. I really think you need two. Is Markstrom going to outvalue himself with the team? Maybe. Like we discussed, man, we just talked about it. Do you pay him $7 million? Or do you go with Demko and hope that Domingo or who's the young kid that played with Windsor?
DiPietro.
Yeah, true.
Can one of those guys be able to catch fire and be a solid number two? You already know I'm a huge fan of Markstrom. I just find that he suits that team for the next couple of years. And knowing that Demko, we saw a small part of it, is looks like he's ready to go. So that's a decision they're going to have to make. As far as you can't go out and find 20, 30 goal scorers, and I think Toffoli is capable and able, playing with the guys that he's playing, to hit the 20, 25, 30 goal mark. So you got to figure out what's more important. Is it more important to fill the net or keep the puck out of the net? That's a decision they're going to have to make. If you ask me, at $7 million, that's a big price for a goaltender who is in his 30s. I'm glad I'm not making a decision that they can make, and I'll just discuss it and talk about it when it's done.
well, let me throw this at you then, because you're right. It's such a slippery slope right now, but knowing that the cap's going to stay flat, knowing there's an expansion draft a year away.
D-ball, it's a game changer decision for the organization. It really is. Like,
and personally,
at the point where Vancouver is right now, if you make the wrong decision, you set it back again. When there's been so much traction, man, like there's a lot of pressure on Benning in order to and his staff in order to get this decision right, because you don't want to take a step back when you've taken so many steps forward. And knowing how really good this team and how fast this team is playing with Travis, and we're having guys have career years under Travis, this has got to be, this decision's got to be the right one, because they cannot afford to take a step back, especially with the fan base, how excited they are with this team and all that. And there's a buzz with this organization, this team, and it's just, it's a humongous decision for the organization to get this right.
No, and that's
especially going into next year.
No, I totally agree. And if you're Jacob Markstrom, man, like you've worked your whole career to get to this point to kind of have your home run contract. So I understand like what he wants to get as well, but which kind of brings to the point, like the new no movement clause. Like if you're in Markstrom's position, like how important is that for you at this stage to have some variation of a no movement, where you look around the league, Bert, like what? I think almost a third of the league has some form of modification or some variation of a no trade or a no movement.
Well, I will tell you on just from my perspective and what happened with me during my negotiations when things were rolling with me in the 2000s, the early 2000s, it was important for me to have that in my back pocket, that I'm the one who gets to make the decision on what happens, where I'm going. And I think that has a lot to do with having a young family and trying to do the right thing by my family in order to make a decision that I decide where I go or what happens. And so I'm not going somewhere where I don't want to be. And then you're flip flopping around and going around. It is, as an older player, if you have a young family, it was important to me. I don't know if it's as important to the other guys, but it was important to me that I wanted to make sure that my family was in a situation that was good for my kids and all that. So that was, in my negotiations, it was important that I had that in there, that I was the deciding factor whether or where I end up if it ever came to a situation like that.
Yeah, and now with expansion looming in Seattle, I just don't know. As you said, you know, given the keys to the car to Jacob Markstrom, there might be worse decisions to be made, but I think you can go back to Luongo, Schneider. How are you going to play this out? You got two very valuable assets, but we'll see. Hey, the decision might be made easy if Jacob Markstrom wants the money and he's got money coming from somewhere else and it's just too rich for the Canucks blood, knowing that they've got Hughes and Pettersson next year to sign, and knowing that Thatcher Demko, if you get some help, may very well be a goalie who you can settle for the next 6 or 7 years.
Well, Perry, along with that, you know, as far as you look at the fan base and all that, if you have goaltenders taking up, say, 35% of the salary cap, that's hard for a fan base sometimes to see your goaltender making $7 million sharing the net and sitting on the bench and all that. I find that fans have a hard time digesting seeing a $7 million player playing 30, 40 games. So that I'm pretty sure that comes into consideration when you're deciding how to go with your goaltending pairing.
Yeah. Have you ever had a Popeye chicken sandwich?
No, actually, I haven't had a Popeye's, and I haven't had, what's the other one?
KFC?
Chick-fil-A. During quarantine, that was my one goal, was to go get a Popeye's or go get a Chick-fil-A. And every time I drove to the two places that had them here in Michigan, the line was so long that I got impatient and I left.
See, Popeye sandwiches just came here yesterday. Couldn't get them here at Popeye's. So I'm just testing the waters to see if it's worth it. I'd be like, I'm not waiting for fast food. But okay.
Perry,
from what I hear, it is worth the wait. But at the same time, after you dummy that, you better be near the washroom or near a treadmill.
You left the part out that there was only one person in front of you in line that forced you to storm out, right?
You know my patience level, C-ball, it's very short. So if it was one car, I'd probably left.
Yeah, you demand somebody to have a movement clause. Get out of the way. I need my chicken. Nice to catch up, buddy. We'll talk to you and do this all over again next week, all right?
Sounds good. Enjoy the week, boys.
You as well. There he is. The big man, Todd Bertuzzi, on this Bertuesday edition of the Starting Lineup here on Sportsnet 650. A reminder, this hour is a presentation of Dunbar Lumber, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner and Arbuta Street in Vancouver, or check them out online at dunbarlumber.com. And Stanley Cup winner and Dunbar Lumber's captain, Ken Priestley, messaging me last night. I think he was very happy to see that Vegas was bounced, and kind of echoing the same sentiment that some of our listeners are texting in at 650-650 pair. A lot of Canucks fans happy that Vegas is out. Kind of an arrogant team.
Well, that's it. Playoffs mean rivalries, and now nobody likes Vegas. We won't like Vegas for a long time.
That's what rivalries make. That's what makes rivalries great. Absolutely. 26 minutes after 7 o'clock. Speaking of Vegas, what now for the Golden Knights? We'll dive in with Jesse Granger, who covers the Golden Knights for The Athletic, and we'll do that next right here on your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
You know, there's no doubt that the last couple of games of the Vancouver series against Demko probably rattled our confidence a little bit in that area as a group.
This is the Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
The Demko effect got in their kitchen, apparently. At least that's in the opinion of Pete DeBoer. And, you know, Per, I will say this. We did talk about this. Jesse Granger, who covers the Golden Knights for The Athletic, will join us here momentarily. But we did talk about this a bit last week, that how the offense for Vegas effectively dried up at the start of Game 5. The thing I do find differently, though, is that Vegas had plenty of good looks. Like, it's not like you kind of mentioned at the outset. Like, sticks weren't just folding here. They had lots of good looks. Anton Khudobin just has played out of his mind in these playoffs.
I haven't necessarily heard the word or didn't while Vegas was playing bad puck luck. You know, it wasn't like a one-timer and you fan on it. It wasn't like crossbar posts all the time, although they had their share. And, James, I'll be honest, that was a post-game comment from Peter DeBoer last night. I can't remember a time when an actual player kind of was singled out as to being the game changer for a coach's team, going, you know what, we kind of lost it against him. You said the Demko effect, and we never found it. The Demko, Khudobin, the goalie effect. They acted like they never lost confidence. And as Bert said, I think they're waking up this morning, going to their respective homes, going, I can't believe we're not in the Stanley Cup final. I can't believe we were gone in five games. But was it borderline cockiness or too much confidence? Who knows? I thought Vegas was the best team in Edmonton, and I'm surprised they're going home. But at the end of the day, doesn't matter what the scores, what the score differential is, as the Stars go in there, Dallas goes in with the lowest goal differential in like since 1968 in the Blues to a final. But Vegas just couldn't find it, and it started with Thatcher Demko.
Let's bring in Jesse Granger, who covers the Golden Knights for The Athletic, as the Golden Knights now try to figure out the next step in what should be also maybe not quite as tough or difficult an offseason as the Canucks have on their hands, but an interesting one now in terms of dealing with the personnel and a slippery slope with respect to goaltending. Jesse, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, guys.
Good morning. You know, somebody made a great point on social media this morning saying, you know, it really kind of speaks volumes to just how good Vegas has gotten out in the National Hockey League, where here we are surprised that a team just 3 years into the National Hockey League has failed to reach the Stanley Cup final, and that's seen as a disappointment. But obviously it is. So I guess first things first, what now?
Yeah, I kind of wrote the same thing last night. I mean, the team's been in the league 3 years. They've never missed the playoffs. They have two division titles, and they have the trip to the Cup final and a Western Conference final. And yet, this feels like a major, major disappointment just because of how high they've set that bar and how good of a team they've built so quickly. It's going to be a very interesting offseason. They have a lot of issues to deal with in net, mostly, and the other issue is that they're very, very close to that salary cap, and the good news is they've got most of their guys locked up long term, most of their major pieces locked up, so they're not going to lose anyone, but it's going to be very difficult to add or change make changes to this lineup, and obviously it wasn't good enough to win the Cup this year, so it's going to be interesting to see the direction they take.
Did you – Riley Smith scores in the third period. You've covered this game all season, this team. Do you think – oh, here we go. Finally, one of the guys who hasn't been able to score, they get going. Like, are you surprised you're finished covering this team for the season?
Yeah, I am. To be honest, when Dallas scored the goal to make it 2-1, I started feeling the, like, oh my gosh, here we go. They're really gonna blow this. And the reason is because not only because Vegas was struggling to score, but also because Dallas has shown an ability to score timely goals all postseason. And like, I think in past postseasons when I'm covering a team and I'm traveling and I'm flying back and forth from city to city, I don't get to watch the other games. But because of this unique situation, I was able to watch every minute of Dallas this year, and they regularly make that play and score those goals when they needed it, and Vegas regularly has given up those goals despite having the puck for 90% of the game. So when Dallas flipped the ice in the third period and really started pressuring, it felt like that was going to happen. And all the credit to Dallas. I mean, that team has their star players may not be the scorers they once were, but those guys have come up big in the biggest situations and found ways to score goals when they needed it most.
Jesse Granger from The Athletic with us here on Sportsnet 650. So can the relationship be mended? You touched on goaltending. Can the relationship be mended with Marc-Andre Fleury and the Golden Knights, a guy who was essentially the face of the franchise when the puck first dropped for the organization?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would need to be mended from everything I've heard. And I don't know necessarily if it will be, not because it can't be, but because I think if they wanted Marc-Andre Fleury to be the goalie moving forward, that's definitely possible. But I just am not sure that's what they want. From everything I've heard, and I've reported for a couple weeks now, that I believe they're trying to sign Robin Lehner. I don't know about the handshake deals that have been reported. I've heard those, but I don't know if they're true. All I know is that what I've heard is the Golden Knights' plan is to sign Robin Lehner long-term. And if you're going to do that, it's going to cost some money because he's been one of the better goalies in the league over the last few years. And you've already got Marc-Andre Fleury for $7 million for the next 2 years. So you obviously can't afford both of those guys. So if your plan is to sign Robin Lehner, then your other plan must be to move on from Marc-Andre Fleury.
And does that surprise you?
It does. It does. It shocks me. I said it before the postseason started. I was shocked that they benched Marc-Andre Fleury. And not because of his play. His play struggled this season. But at the same time, he was really good early in the year, and he was really good at the end of the year. He had a really tough stretch in the middle of the season, and he was dealing with a lot of personal stuff. His father was really sick and ended up passing away, and that hit him hard. And I don't know how much that had to do with his on-ice struggles, but I do think that a guy who has carried your franchise for 2.5 years, took you to a Stanley Cup, took a chance on Vegas, and has really helped legitimize this franchise and this organization as a great spot to be for other players. And I think that's helped facilitate them getting Pacioretty and Stone and Stasny and all these guys. And he's carried your team for 2.5 years. He has a couple bad months and they ditched him. And I honestly was shocked by it. And it's pro sports. Win at all costs. You can't let relationships get in the way of winning. And they definitely showed that with Robin Lehner, but I still think they should have given Marc-Andre Fleury the chance to start. And if he loses the net, go to Robin Lehner, but they didn't really give him that chance. And that did surprise me.
When you look at now, as you mentioned, some of the suggested wink, wink, nudge, nudge, backhand deal sort of thing, agreement with Robin Lehner. Is there still a belief and a confidence that you want to commit long-term? And not to say that Lehner was bad, but was he great in this series?
Yeah, I didn't think Lehner was bad. I mean, I have a hard time faulting a goalie who couldn't win a game unless he got a shutout. And that was the case. I mean, if you look back, the last time Robin Lehner won a game in these playoffs while allowing a goal was in the first round against Chicago. His last four wins of the postseason all were shutouts, and every game he allowed a goal in after that first round was a loss. And you can't expect your goalie to get a shutout or a loss every night. And he didn't allow many goals in this game, in this series against Dallas. But at the same time, you're right. He didn't play great. And if he would have played great, the Golden Knights probably would have walked through this series in 4 or 5 games. But I think it's more of a stylistic difference. I think Peter DeBoer and the Golden Knights prefer a bigger positional goalie, and that was why they ended up going with Robin Lehner over Marc-Andre Fleury. But at the same time, it's when your goalie doesn't play lights out, which Robin Lehner clearly didn't. He played fine, but he wasn't great. When there's room for improvement in net, you're always going to wonder what would have happened if they would have played the other guy.
Do you not think that Marc-Andre Fleury knew this coming, just with the whole Alan Walsh, like, it doesn't matter how this plays out, I'm done here?
Yeah, I mean, I think once the reports that they were trying to sign Robin Lehner to a long-term deal started to come out, and I think the writing was kind of on the wall. Because, like I said, it's they can't keep both guys. That's just too much money tied up in a position, especially for a team that's this close to the cap, and with the cap being flat for the foreseeable future. It just doesn't seem possible to keep them. So it was always a, is it going to be Robin or Mark moving forward? And it looks like they're leaning towards Robin. So that would lead Marc-Andre Fleury to believe that he probably doesn't have much of a future here, which is, it's crazy to say.
Well, Jesse, appreciate you you doing this this morning. I know it's a quick turnaround for you, bright and early after the Golden Knights were sent packing last night. And who knew that Thatcher Demko was the man who could be the most hated man now in Vegas after putting this Golden Knights team in this position in the first place 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it definitely felt like that rattled them a little bit. And this team, it wasn't a new thing. I mean, this team led the league in shots, scoring chances, expected goals in the regular season, but finished 14th in scoring. So they were very good all season at creating offense, but struggled to finish. And it really, really got magnified in the playoffs when Thatcher Demko played as well as he did. And then obviously Anton Khudobin played really well too. So it was a problem that was kind of lying beneath the surface of the water all season. And then it reared its head at the worst possible moment.
Thanks for this, Jesse.
Jesse.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, there he is. Jesse Granger, great perspective on the Vegas Golden Knights for The Athletic. And, what now? I look at Vegas. You got to figure out what you're going to do. And good luck to Vegas trying to figure out how you move a $7 million contract to Marc-Andre Fleury if that's the direction. But I'm not looking at necessarily breaking up the band up front. You've committed to a lot of those guys up front. You know, Tuck's locked up, Marchessault's locked up, Riley Smith's locked up. You know, Mark Stone's locked up. I like the way Mark Stone played in that series. You know, I like the way Mark Stone played against Vancouver. You know, Max Pacioretty. I mean, those guys had a ton of good looks. They just could not finish. But statistically, that's what that team's MO is. The only guy I would kind of say is kind of MIA in a lot of ways was Paul Stastny, Pair.
Yeah, I don't see them changing a whole lot. I think the intrigue will be Fleury, and how do you move $7 million? Yeah, there'd be a lot of teams that are interested. I mean, Calgary might be interested, Edmonton might be interested, but neither of those teams are looking at $7 million goalies. They might have to eat a little bit of salary to move the body. I'd be very curious as to where he goes. And at 35, you're not a young Detroit team going, we need someone to really backstop us for a little bit. You want someone where you think Marc-Andre Fleury could put us over the edge and make us a playoff team, and you never know how far we go. So it's too bad, because I questioned that pick when Vegas went there, but because I wasn't, the personality, would it work, French speaking? He has been everything for Vegas. He has helped sell that team. And for it to end that way, sometimes sports is such a cruel business.
Well, and that's, as Jesse kind of pointed out, like, there was a guy who took a chance on Vegas to begin with and give him that street cred right from the get-go and was brilliant for them that first year. Even last year, Marc-Andre Fleury was good. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury, for him bowing out of the All-Star game this year, allowed for Jacob Markstrom to be an All-Star goaltender this year as well, right? But now, you cut bait. He's also able to control his destiny to a degree, because he's got a modified no movement clause there. So we'll wait and see. 7:44, your Canucks commute coming up at the top of the clock with Sportsnet Dan Murphy. The reminder, this hour is a presentation of Dunbar Lumber, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner, Arbutus Street in Vancouver, or visit them online at DunbarLumber.com. Major League Baseball has come to an agreement on the postseason. They're bubbling up. We'll give you those details. And Tiger King unfolds in real life. Yeah, did you see this last night? That story's all ahead right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome to The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
All right, 11 minutes to 8 o'clock here on this Tuesday morning. Cebulski, Solkowski kicking it with you, and Ken Rosenthal reporting that Major League Baseball and the Players Association, they came to an agreement late last night on a plan for the 2020 playoffs that will include neutral site bubbles for the Division Series, the LCS, and the World Series. An official announcement is expected to come down sometime later today. So Major League Baseball following the NHL, Major League, the NBA, MLS, they're going with a bubble next month for their playoffs.
Makes sense. And I haven't said that much about Major League Baseball, how they got into this whole thing, although they've had some pretty good success of late. I think everyone watching the NFL, as much as we talked about some low ratings for Sunday night and we wait for the ratings and the games, we'll see what rolls in with the NFL. Having their teams travel to different cities, will we see players because of COVID? There's a couple, I think I drafted a back in Jacksonville who's out because of COVID, hasn't played with them yet. It's been gone for a couple weeks. But we'll see. It makes sense. Why not? Get them together, start the playoffs. Great thing about Major League Baseball, James, what are the Jays got, like 14 games left? They start with the Yankees. 14 games left, and 18 of them are against the Yankees. That's kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, they told it's exactly it. Seven of the final 14 games for the Jays are against the Yankees. And, man, it's fascinating because there's only a half game separating those two teams right now in the AL East. And, you know, to kind of see where it's at, the Jays are only 3.5 back of the Rays right now for top spot in the AL East. Like, it's 2 weeks to go, and, you know, baseball's intriguing right now. It's and after all the kind of bumps and on the road, like, they're kind of figuring it out. And, you know, they're going to be able to, I think, for the most part, to be able to get this done on time at the end of September with some of these makeup games. And lo and behold, you know, they'll go bubble up for the playoffs, which makes a lot of sense based on where we're at right now.
Let me ask you this. You know, some people texting in, Vancouver fans waking up very happy this morning. Las Vegas is out. And that's how sports is, right? Okay, if we can't win, we don't want you guys to win. You're an arrogant team. We didn't like you. All right, so let's take it this way. Where does the fandom start? Where do you really cheer for someone? Raptors were gone on Friday. They're done. Disappointing, had a nice run, didn't get the respect, and yet they had a great year. So are basketball fans in Canada cheering for Kawhi to win tonight? Or are they going, you know what, Jamal Murray is a Canadian, I want Denver to win. Or do they go, if the Raptors can't win, I don't want Kawhi to win tonight?
Man, I'm a Kawhi guy. I had no selfishly, would I wish he would have stayed with the Raptors? Sure. But it's hard to sit there and hate on a guy who wanted to ultimately go home and play in his hometown city and not go to the favorite, you know, the Lakers, the popular choice. He went to the B-list choice, essentially, and went to the Clippers. I got no beef with that. He delivered a title here on this side of the border. I'm still a Kawhi guy. Jamal Murray, though, like, it's hard to hate on Jamal Murray, though, but I would say, like, selfishly speaking, I want to see the Battle of L.A. I want to see LeBron and Kawhi in a 7-game series. Sorry, Jamal Murray.
It's the better show. I've got no problem with Kawhi. Kawhi did not turn on this country, did not turn on the Raptors. He went to, he's got the ability to go do it. Listen to everyone, but I do think there are some people that are going, hey, if we can't do it, and he left us, then I don't want him to have success, but we'll see. Game 7.
We're up against the clock here. Your Canucks commute coming up at the top of the hour. Dan Murphy will join us for the conversation in just a couple of moments. I do in the 8 o'clock hour. I do want to hit on man. If anybody watched Tiger King, as many of you did on Netflix, it took another turn last night in the middle of Dancing with the Stars, where Carol Baskin's one of the contestants right now. We'll get to that story coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. But your Canucks commute is next. He's Perry. I'm James, it's your Ski Patrol on a Tuesday morning, and we're all damn sure happy that it's not Monday after what we saw yesterday, right here on Sportsnet 650.
A cup of Joe and the Canuck commute.
I think it's going to be fascinating. I think they're going to take runs at Markstrom, Tanev, and Toffoli and see if they can do it. And that'll affect some of their decisions elsewhere.
A five-star morning on the starting lineup.
All right, 8 o'clock, right on the dot. How you doing, everybody? Cebulski, Sulkowski, hour number three here on Sportsnet 650. Mainly cloudy skies, still widespread smoke here in the region with some showers in the forecast this morning as well. We got to a high of 18. Well, the Dallas Stars are off to the Stanley Cup Final. We'll get to that in just a little bit. This is your Canucks commute here on Sportsnet 650. But you heard from just Elliot Friedman just a few moments ago, Per, and the reports that from the Canucks hockey Sportsnet hockey insider that the Canucks are trying to re-sign Vancouver's money team, the money team, if you will, TMT, Toffoli, Markstrom, Tanev. Easier said than done. But I like the fact that they're going to try to keep those assets in-house.
Well, I with the exception maybe of the Bruins, where Krug was kind of like, hey, thanks, everybody. I don't think I'm here. Nothing with the relationship of the three players that are involved in the conversation is nothing but positive. Now, you throw in a Troy Stetcher and a Jake Virtanen, and I think the most feel you've got your big three. And then there has to be some changes, James. This team is good. They're a long ways from being a Stanley Cup contender, and they don't get better if you keep with the same pieces. So all three of those players, are they returning? Boy, you would have to have some people maybe take a little bit of a haircut and go, I'm going to do this for the good of the team. I don't know if they will. I mean, why would you? They've worked hard to be unrestricted free agents. This is their payday. We were asking people on our poll question today, do they sign all three? Do they keep one? Only Markstrom or keep Toffoli and Tanev? Right now, I mean, hey, good, everybody. I know it's raining, but it's sunny and positive where you are because 43% of you say they will be able to sign all three. I don't think that's possible, James.
You know, there is an element of wanting to win, though, right? Like, tell me this, where – to me, it's about prioritizing your assets, right? And recognizing Todd Bertuzzi made a great point in the last hour where, you know, give some young guys, you've got to make some moves, you've got to make some changes. But would you have an issue with Tanev, Toffoli, and Markstrom all coming back? Absolutely
not.
No,
I don't
have
an issue, but I don't think they'll get it done.
Would you like if they could pull that off, you know, price point is obviously important in terms of navigating your assets, but, you know, the Canucks have close to $15 million in cap space available. And you look at the priorities with the RFAs. You know, I think when you look at Tyler Mott, I think that's one you definitely want to keep. I mean, Vertanen's obviously an asset. Stetcher's obviously an asset. But at what price point? I think if you can prioritize keeping, you know, Chris Tanev, and if you can find a way to make it work, you know, maybe there's an element of term that works where he's not necessarily looking at a big cap number. Hey, look, he's also earned the right to go and explore. But prioritizing your asset, you know, Jake Virtanen, we've talked about the fact that he's due for a raise. You know, is that going to be too much for the Canucks to stomach for a guy who's essentially been a top nine player, not a top six player? So do you parlay that into maybe a future draft pick and move that along somewhere along the way? You know, Tyler Toffoli, to me, I've said it multiple times on this show, I like that fit on the top line with Miller and Pettersson. He has brought an element of leadership. He fit in. He was a point-of-game player. And if you can get him at 4 years, Irv Kafar was reporting Canucks Insider on the program last night with Walks and Sat. You know, if you could get somewhere around that $4.8 to $5 million to keep Tyler Toffoli, I'd do that. 4 years? Yeah, that certainly seems palatable for the organization. I think that would probably work for Tyler Toffoli, perhaps. And then the Jacob Markstrom situation. You know, what sort of appetite is there from a goaltending standpoint? Anton Khudobin just is off to the Stanley Cup final pair, and he's making $2.5 million. He's going to get a raise this summer. There's no question about it. But does that give some pause for concern to say, okay, we got somebody in Thatcher Demko we really like and showed us a lot in elimination games, in three of them for that matter, and Jacob Markstrom, where do you go on that? But I think if you can fit in somewhere around $5 million, I think that would be something that the Canucks would definitely be on board with doing.
Here's an interesting thing, too. You don't want them to spend too much money because you've got Pettersson and you've got Hughes next year. Well, and boy, we get Berkey spouting off on this on Thursdays. We just look at guys coming to their entry-level contract, and you figure they've got to be, you know, the $9 and $10 million. Well, what if those are the players that go, hey, you know what, I'll take a shorter deal, just get a bridge deal, and we'll keep going here because I want to be part of this team. Markstrom, Toffoli stay, Tanev is here. I'm going to be getting a lot more money than I was the first 3 years of my deal, so I'll be satisfied if you get me up to the, you know, the $7 million range for a little bit, and then we'll deal with it more because I want to be part of the team. They always say, you know, taking a haircut. Well, you're not when you're going from a, you know, your entry level contract and all of a sudden you're making $6 or $7 million. And I do believe those two have the character going, hey, I want to win. I'm not going to complain. Look how much money I'm making after my first year contract. So, you know, they can have preliminary discussions with those players, and their agents are going to say, hey, take a look at Mitch Marner. That's what these guys want. And we did find out there's reports that Peter Laviolette's deal is just under $5 million in the high fours for the three-year deal he signed. So what does that say about the new economic era? That's kind of more than I thought you'd be paying for a head coach. Travis Green's probably happy. So, you know, it's all about what's next year too. And does next year mean they have to break the bank? There's no real room for those guys to go anywhere. You just have to make sure you have the relationship. So Markstrom at $7 million's never happened. I don't think Markstrom happens at $6 million. But Markstrom at $5 million, sure. Toffoli at under $5 million, sure. There's a way. As Bertuzzi said, James, boy, these decisions are really going to set things up for the future as to what happens in the next couple months here.
Let's bring in Sportsnet Canucks reporter Dan Murphy into the fold. Morning, Murph.
Morning, boys. How goes it?
Oh, you know, just filling another 3 hours of magic here on Sportsnet 650. You know, where to dive in here, and you look at where what Elliot Friedman was reporting yesterday with the Canucks hopeful to try to take a shot at re-signing Tanev, Markstrom, and Toffoli, all three of them, and try to keep them in the fold. I mean, this ultimately comes down to prioritizing your assets going forward here, and you know, with your RFAs, if you want to do your power rankings, the importance, these guys clearly fall off, you know, significantly after the big three of the UFAs, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think we've always kind of said it's been Markstrom, Toffoli, and then Tanev in that order in terms of the priorities, and we just never really knew if, you know, Toffoli had real interest in re-signing in Vancouver, and by all accounts and all reports over the past week or so, it sure seems like he is motivated to remain a Vancouver Canuck. Now, I don't think that's just negotiating through the press. He probably likes the fit, likes the chance to play in the top six, a chance perhaps to play with a guy like Pettersson. So, you know, I don't know what the number is there. I mean, we always hear maybe 4 years around $5 million, just under $5 million, get it done. And if that's the case, then maybe that does make it easier to slide in Markstrom. And if Leonard is indeed 5 times 5, well, Markstrom's got to be right around that. Now, I know that there's tax differences in Vegas compared to living up in British Columbia, and maybe they'll have to account a little bit to that. And obviously something like the expansion draft, Markstrom's going to want protection. I mean, I think that's going to be a big thing for him, and I don't think he's signing unless he gets it. So to me, there's a couple of things you have to work around, and if you can get those two done, and sooner rather than later, then you can start working on Tanev. But, I mean, with the flat cap, this is not going to be easy. You don't believe have certainty on Michael Ferland yet, and that would certainly help if you knew something about what his status is going to be for next year. And then after that, yes, you look at Stetcher, and then, of course, Jake Virtanen. But if a couple dominoes can fall and fall rather quickly, then I think you're going to have a much easier time moving forward. Because, I mean, obviously guys like Walker reporting their significant interest in Markstrom from a couple teams, and one of them has to be in Alberta, probably Calgary. So there are some other teams interested in these players. But I think the motivation for those players to stay in Vancouver is probably fairly high.
Is there any way that Toffoli, I guess maybe he hasn't become the number one priority, but is the gap closed?
I don't know if it's he's jumped ahead of Markstrom in the priority, but perhaps he's jumped ahead of him in the possibility of getting it done the soonest. So I still think Markstrom is number one on the list, but I mean, if Toffoli is set to come in a number that's palatable for Jim Benning and the Canucks, and maybe that can get done. I was always skeptical of the fact of him remaining here I know the Canucks always wanted to get him done because let's be honest, they paid a steep price to bring this guy in for what turned out to be, 10 games of the regular season and around 10 games of the playoffs? I'm not even sure. So you don't want a lot of second-round pick as well as a highly touted prospect, a Madden, walk out the door for 20 games of service. So they always wanted to sign him. And, you know, to me, the deal was, did he want to come back? And I think, you know, when you hear these things now, it's probably fairly obvious he does see Vancouver as a good landing spot for him. It's still on the West Coast. And I think that's preferable for him. So if he liked the fit and his wife liked the city and it's a possibility to get it done and get some certainty in this, you know, in this market now where I think you don't want to be last at the table. It's musical chairs here. You want to get your deal done as quickly as possible, I would think, because with the flat cap, you just don't know what teams are going to have enough money to give you the deal you want. And if Vancouver is motivated to get you done, I think if you're Toffoli, you say, hey, let's get 4 years of certainty done. Let's sign and just enjoy the rest of our, I guess, postseason here for a couple of months.
Dan Murphy here on Sportsnet 650. You know, the one thing that really kind of jumped out for me with the Dallas Stars making their way to the Stanley Cup final last night, and a neat story with Rick Bonus we can touch on as well here, Murph, but you look at how many contributors. I mean, they've got some vets, obviously, that, you know, Jamie Benn just got better and better as the playoffs have worn on here. You know, obviously, Hudobin's doing what he's doing. But you look at how many, players that are making, you know, very little, you know, that fit into the cap so nicely. You know, Heiskanen, you know, and he's going to get paid significantly here in the next year or so. But, you know, Kiviranta, Faxa, Hintz, all four of those players are under $1 million. You know, Corey Perry has kind of, you know, pulled an Undertaker and sat up here during the playoffs and shown his worth. You know, Jamie Oleksiak has certainly shown his value, and I don't think anybody saw that, but, you know, he's under $2 million. Corey Perry's $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. That's where the Canucks need to benefit from now going forward, right? Like, they didn't necessarily have, outside of Pettersson and Hughes, those guys who kind of fit in nicely with the cap that contribute the way that the Stars are getting from everybody for the most part.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the Stars, I mean, a lot of their players are older. You would have thought that the window was kind of closing for Jamie Benn's of the world.
Pavelski, you know.
Pavelski signs during the offseason, but they, you know, Radulov picked Dallas as well, and he's been a great player. But I think in this day and age, James, you're exactly right. You probably need between, you know, 3 and 5 guys on your roster on entry-level deals or, you know, small number deals that are contributing and doing quite a lot for your team. I mean, I think this day and age, that's just the way it has to be. And you don't want to waste those years of those young players anymore when they're making, especially if they're your stars. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, the Chicago Blackhawks got one cup win with Taves and Kane on their entry-level deal.
Yeah.
Right. So
2010.
So if you can find your stars and have them, you know, be real contributors for you, and they're on their entry level deals, I think you have to try to make hay. That's why, you know, next season is rather important for Vancouver. I think you have to look at whether you believe it or not. If you're management, you have to look at it as your window is starting to open because you have those guys, your two best players, on their entry level deals, and you got to find a way to support them. And that's where the problematic bottom six is Vancouver. That's just too bloated with money that you can't get rid of, and so you can't get, you know, the proper supporting cast for these guys, and that's where it's a little bit of a disappointment. Toffoli certainly helps. Markstrom, getting him locked up, that helps, obviously, but you still need a ton of help in your bottom six. You need a ton of help on your defense. I'm just not sure how they're going to work that around this flat cap with you know, some of the money they have tied up already.
Is Jim Benning making more phone calls this year? We know last year he made some phone calls to see if maybe there was any interest in Sutter and obviously Berchi. Yeah. But does Roussel come into that conversation now? Does Beagle come into that conversation to seeing if there's anyone that has an interest? Maybe he has to eat some money. Do you think he's opening up some of those guys to, would you like it just to make that room?
I think you have to. No, I mean, I think you have to explore all possible options after what happened this season. You have to try to clear up some money to make sure you have the supporting cast that can get you into the playoffs, first of all, on a regular basis. Because, I mean, if you're asking me, I'd say they're even money to make the playoffs next year. I wouldn't say it's any better than 50-50. So that's probably not good enough if you're looking at a team that has your number one center, your number one defenseman, and potentially your number one goaltender locked up if they sign Markstrom. I think you have to be open to all that. I mean, there's I know Jordy Mann's only making $2 million a year, but if you don't see him as in your top six, I mean, there's another name that you have to look to move, and that would be probably an attractive piece for a lot of teams, just to clear out a little bit of salary. And then you hope that one of those kids from either Utica or Rathbone is ready to come up and play that role. So I think any and all of those players should be available, whether or not there's takers for the likes of Sutter or Beagle or Roussel. I mean, that remains to be seen.
You know, you mentioned from a financial standpoint and the flexibility or maybe even lack thereof with some of the other contracts. You know, they've got almost $15 million to play with here now. And, you know, there's a lot of guys to kind of take into consideration going forward. And, you know, they're ultimately going to cut bait on some of these members. But for all the panic and doom and gloom for next year, Murph, like, they're going to free up over $20 million of cap space, right? Is it as doom and gloom as we all look at to be? Because I think that money will essentially cover off, you know, for Pettersson and Hughes for the following season.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's not as doom and gloom for next two seasons from now, not next season. Obviously, next season, there is a problem, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about, not being able to put the team on the ice that can best support your guys on their entry-level deals. So I think it is a bit of doom and gloom for this season, but past the season, as long as you spend your money wisely, then they can get out of this cap problem they're in and probably ice the type of team they want to. So, yeah, I mean, I think it is still rather doom and gloom for this season. And of course, no, Luongo doesn't help. The pandemic to the flat cap certainly doesn't help. These are all things that probably Benning wasn't factoring in, obviously. But this is the hand they're dealt, and they have to figure out a way to navigate this as best as possible. And that's why I think the Tanev deal still could be difficult, because Chris is going to want to get paid. This is kind of his one contract, last big contract to get, I would think. And while, yes, he loves Vancouver and probably loves his team and loves playing with Quinn Hughes, he's got to look out for number one as well.
Yeah, it is a business. We probably won't talk to you, obviously, before we get a Stanley Cup final that's going. Let's assume it's Tampa. Who'd we like?
Well, I mean, I'd probably say I have to like Tampa, depending on Braden Point. I know he kind of got dinged up at the end of the last game again. I just think that they're the best team. I mean, Dallas gets by Las Vegas. I didn't think that would happen. And, you know, they kind of got PDO'd a little bit in that. Vegas kind of once again controlling play and dominating on shots and getting stymied by a better goaltender. I think the Stars have been opportunistic. And if you're asking me who I'm cheering for, it is Rick Bowness. I'd love to see him win a cup. Four decades now in the league, almost five. It would just be great to see him hoist one. You just see the other joy on his face when they scored that overtime winner last night, and how much fun he's having. And, you know, he knows that, you know, he might not have another chance after this one. So I guess sentimentally, I'm cheering for Rick Bowness when you're cheering for certain people, but I still think that the Lightning are the best team left in the tournament.
You know, it is remarkable that, you know, and I think this will be Rick Bowness's team if he wants to choose to continue coaching, you know, when they get to the offseason to address it. But, you know, you look at Jeff Ward yesterday being named officially the head coach of the Calgary Flames, and you look at what Rick Bowness has done, both guys taking over in awkward, you know, very unique situations. And for Bones to do what he's done, man, you talk about a survivor in this league. Rick Bowness is exactly that. You know, you're right. It's such a good story. And to see it, I kind of mentioned at the outset of the show, like when I first broke into this business, Rick Bowness was the head coach of the Ottawa Senators in the mid-1990s, Murph. Yeah. And like you said, you know, for me dealing with him, you know, way back then, you know, from all the years that you've been on the flights with the Vancouver Canucks and for Bones here to be with the Canucks during his time, like, you know, just one of the legitimate good guys, you know, in the hockey world.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more. Great guy to have beers with, great stories. When we used to interview the assistant coaches in between periods, you know, before they go out, his game with me was always to answer one question in 2 minutes and not let me get a follow-up. That was always his game. If he could do that, he would talk for 2 minutes straight and just ramble on so I couldn't get a follow-up. So that's just some of the stuff I remember about Rick.
Murph, thanks, bud. Enjoy your day.
All right, boys. Have a great day.
Thank you. You as well. There he is. Dan Murphy on your Canucks commute this morning here on Sportsnet 650. Dallas off to the Stanley Cup Final. Canucks some work to do as the Dallas Stars dispatch the team that dispatched the Canucks. So I guess sort of the how do you like them apples sort of approach pair.
Yeah, and you know what? Rick Bonus with that win will control his own fate if he doesn't win a Stanley Cup. I don't think there's any way the owner Tom Gilardi, local Vancouver guy, doesn't go, hey, this is your team if you want it. And how does a guy who spent five decades essentially is a hockey man through and through, family is all hockey, not say, give me another crack as a head coach with this hockey team? Like maybe it's the perfect story. You walk away if you win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if he doesn't say, you know what, you're going to get me behind the bench with a team like this. I'm going to go one more time.
Did you say team like this? I thought the Canucks were a team like that. Or team like that,
well,
sorry, my bad.
They're a team like that. They're a team like that. They're a team like this in Dallas.
8:21, you know, some other news we'll get to coming up at the bottom of the clock. But last night, so Dancing with the Stars, new season kind of kicked off last night on the
now,
season
tell me
premiere.
You weren't watching it.
I was not watching it. I, you know, between watching a couple of dud Monday night football games and watching the Western final last night and watch the Stars punch their ticket, that was the Stars, not Dancing with the Stars. But I couldn't help but notice on social media that what had popped up. So anybody who would watch Tiger King on Netflix when it dropped earlier this year, absolutely fascinated so many people. But Carol Baskin, one of the key ingredients of the series Tiger King, she is a contestant on this year's edition of Dancing with the Stars. And during the broadcast last night, family of her late husband actually had an ad, like a commercial with her missing husband that actually aired during the premiere, begging for the public's help in trying to find Don Lewis. Here's how it sounded.
I'm Gail, one of Don Lewis's daughters. We are a real family, and to us, he was daddy.
I'm Linda, one of Don Lewis's daughters, and we miss our dad.
I'm Donna. I'm Don Lewis's oldest daughter. We need to know what happened to our father.
I'm Ann, Don's former assistant. All we're asking is justice for Don.
Don Lewis mysteriously disappeared in 1997. His family deserves answers. They deserve justice. Do you know who did this or if Carol Baskin was involved?
A $100,000 reward has been funded. You can call the tip line at 646-450-6530.
Or call our office at 800-LITIGATE. Thank you.
So this commercial ran in like several markets last night. Wow. Where the family of Don Lewis is offering $100,000. Like, dude, this is a TV show that is turning into real life where people are basically pointing the finger at saying, hey, Carol, we need some evidence here on this woman.
Now, I didn't check and I don't want to be cynical. But are you sure, like, they paid for that commercial spot? Because that's got to cost a little bit of money. That's prime time.
Oh, for sure.
I think Dancing with the Stars does well.
I'd probably, depending on how many markets that would have run in last night, never mind the $100,000 reward.
Like, I would think you're paying $50,000 for that spot, 100 maybe.
Maybe even more, depending on where, like, how many markets and which markets that ran in. But you know, it has certainly gone viral as well on social media. But, man, like, you know, and there were a lot of people that kind of said, like, how is, you know, people have been kind of calling for this for 6 months and they kind of reopened the investigation as a result of this docuseries that dropped on Netflix. But Carol still under fire. And, man, like, talk about a strategic play on the family. Hey, we're just going to happen to time this out in the middle of Dancing with the Stars.
Well, see, James, and so there's the cynic in me going, you know, you don't believe reality TV. Does someone is it ABC that runs Dancing with the Stars say, listen, you guys want to have a little commercial spot? We'll run it like it's not a commercial. It'll come after we go to break, but it'll be our own controlled content. And because we're talking about it this morning, like I had read who's on Dancing with the Stars and she's there. I don't watch it. But now I'm curious to go, okay, are they running that commercial again? I mean, is it possible that it could have been a play from the show?
Well, you think they would do something like that for a from a ratings blip in the middle
of the... people do anything for ratings, right? I mean, reality
TV is not really
reality TV. You
think ABC would sign off on
that?
Yeah.
I mean, is this family so well off? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Dad had some money, but are they so well off? They're going, you know what, this would be a great idea. We'll spend $100,000 and we'll do a commercial. Like, I'm just not sure if that would be their thought, if they're not pushed by television producers to say, hey, here's an idea. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a cynic. I like to be positive, Perry. I don't want to rain on your parade, but I don't believe it. I think
By the way, Perry, you'll be impressed the fact to know that Carol danced to Eye of the Tiger last night.
Is she any good at dancing?
She's Carol Baskin. She's basically a crazy spinster. I'm more excited about the trailer for The Mandalorian that just dropped. Some news involving the Toronto Raptors. There's a new head coach in Washington as well. Todd Bertuzzi also weighing in on the Dallas Stars and the Canucks offseason. We'll get into all of that right here on your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
8:32, Cebulski and Solkowski kicking it with you on a day that is nowhere nearly as disastrous as the start to the week that we had yesterday. News coming down in the last few minutes here, Pear, that Nick Nurse has got the multi-year contract extension from the Toronto Raptors. I don't think that surprises anybody. There's kind of a neat story for Nick Nurse, Pear, in the sense that here was a guy who was kind of seemed to go behind Dwayne Casey's back, and it was kind of a bit of a greasy sort of way to inherit the head coaching job that... You're replacing a guy who was very well liked, very affable.
Coach of the year, wasn't Casey that year?
He was coach of the year, and you know, basically kind of, you know, shuttled on out and wound up in Detroit. But you know, but Nick Nurse has kind of become quite the lovable figure, and ultimately guiding the team to an NBA title. And you know, and to get what he did this year, and I know there were some criticisms of his approach at times and his use of Pascal Siakam. With his struggles in the playoffs, but Nick Nurse has become a very popular figure amongst the Raptors fan base.
Well, and we can't compare apples and oranges talking about the Grizzlies and where the Raptors are. Really no comparison, but I will say this. Nick Nurse loves the city that he works in, and it helps when you win a championship. But he has not ducked anything as far as being out in the public, helping for charitable causes. Hey, he's the coach of the Canadian national basketball team. So he has embraced our country. And I think in doing that, made the most coach of the year this year with the team that people thought would fold. So he made the most of them. It makes perfect sense. You know, and there had been talk to Masai Ujiri, you know, last year going, oh, you wonder if he's going to be courted by someone else to leave. Hey, those are two pretty key cornerstones to have in the GM and the head coach there for a while. So smart move by the Raptors, and now they've got a ceiling. Toronto, I think, because of those two, is a place that, you know, NBA free agents would think of. You know, Giannis may think of, although it sounds like he'll stay in Milwaukee going, hey, that's not a bad place. It wasn't the fit for Kawhi, but I do think Toronto is attractive for NBA players to go, that's not a bad place to play.
Well, and I don't know, they haven't had a tremendous success, and I think, you know, selling players on Canada, you know, especially American-born players, remains a bit of a struggle. When you look at the diversity that, you know, Toronto has had success with from a Raptors standpoint in terms of keeping players, you know, outside of Kyle Lowry, you know, DeMar DeRozan before they ultimately traded him, there just hadn't been a lot of luck in terms of keeping, but, you know, Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, you know, they inherited some of those players via trade, but, you know, Pascal Siakam, you know, it's a, you know, it's a United Nations, if you will. It's a very diverse group from around the world, and it's worked in a lot of ways. Now, when you look at coaching extensions, not just in basketball, you look at what's happening this morning in hockey. Yesterday, Jeff Ward officially named the head coach, the interim tag taken off by the Calgary Flames. And then Peter Laviolette this morning named head coach of the Washington Capitals. I'm assuming at some point in the next few months, Pair, with Travis Green going into the final year of his four-year contract, we'll probably get an extension for Travis. I guess the question now is what the price point will ultimately be for a guy who's finally got the Canucks back into legitimacy in the National Hockey League. But, you know, in a COVID world, you know, what does that price point look like for Travis and a potential raise for him?
Well, and reports are that Laviolette's three-year deal in Washington is pushing $15 million. So that's not exactly not banking some money. So, you know, now every time a contract is signed via player or a coach, you look and go, so that's the new reality. That's not a bad reality for Peter Laviolette. I was reading somewhere, like, I think it's five or six coaches that Ovechkin has had who have been rookie coaches. They needed an experienced coach in there. And I'm sure you don't make a decision if you're Washington and say Peter Laviolette may be our guy without going to number eight and saying, what do you think? And you look at the resume. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's been to a couple finals with different teams. He will be the right guy, I think, for Ovechkin. And it's got to be for Laviolette looking at, okay, so I leave Nashville where I had all that talent in front of me on the bench. I go to Washington. He's going to look at the same thing. That's a team ready to win again right now. So a good deal for him and probably a better deal for Ovechkin to go, okay, at least I've got an experienced coach again.
So based on those reports, basically Barry Trotz money, right?
Yeah, you know what? You're exactly right, James. What was Trotz around the $5 million range after winning a Stanley Cup? They don't give it to him. He says, screw you. He's still working today. And yeah, they got that wrong. And, you know, as Bert said about the Canucks decision, boy, the decisions they make this summer, they will affect a lot of things. The Barry Trotz decision, maybe it's easier to make because you've chased that Stanley Cup and you win it. But essentially, you're right. Here's Barry Trotz. We let him go. Peter, you come here. I'm sure they've had a text conversation in the last 3 or 4 hours going, all right. You want to work for someone who respects you.
Yeah, and then the sense was that Jeff Ward might be closer to $1 million salary annually compared to, you know, something like the robust contracts that we were really starting to see with Quenneville, Babcock, Trotz in recent years. But obviously, Laviolette brings a lot of experience, a lot of success in terms of his track record. We'll see what he can get out of Ovechkin, Backstrom, Carlson, Wilson, Oshie and company here going forward. A lot of people texting in this morning, 650-650. Always appreciate and enjoy the debate and the discussion. There were a couple of the comments that caught your eye this morning, Pear.
Well, you know, I mean, we've had lots of conversation, and thank you everybody jumping on the fast food, because I was trying to find out in this day number two where you can get the Popeye chicken sandwich if it's worth it. I don't know if Popeye's advertising with us. Some say go, some say don't. But Kevin and Suri with the goaltending conversation saying, I'd be shocked if Markstrom doesn't get $6 million. Last chance for a payday. It never had one. It seems like wishful thinking to say anything less than six. Listen, Kevin, I don't disagree with you at all. I think Jacob Markstrom on the outside looking in, meaning teams interested, are going, if we can get him for $6 million, that guy has found his form at 30 years old, and he will be able to backstop us for, you know, 4 or 5 years. So if someone's going, we've got 5 years at $6 million, good for Jacob Markstrom. I don't know, James, if that can be the deal that the Vancouver Canucks put in front of him. I don't know if they can go to $6 million for him, but I do think he may be getting under those kind of numbers put in front of him if he wants to go.
If you're coming off an all-star season, you know, the numbers are there from an analytics standpoint as well in terms of what Markstrom has offered for the Canucks. You know, if there's teams interested, I would not be surprised, you know, in terms of what he can get. And, you know, Andrew Walker was reporting on the program yesterday. He's hearing there's at least two teams that are, you know, significantly interested in landing Jacob Markstrom. And why not, right? I mean, you look at the volatility, you know, with the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, there's two teams that could be prime candidates in Alberta that could potentially be interested. I, you know, go back to, you know, what is Detroit or Chicago do? How about Detroit? Like, they've got some cap space and they need to figure out what to do between the pipes. You know, is Jacob Markstrom a possibility there? You know, there are some teams that would be intrigued to land Jacob Markstrom, and the money, that teams that have that financial flexibility. But here's the other thing for Jacob Markstrom, though. You know, is the grass always green? Like, Jacob Markstrom wants to win. So I think that's going to be going to a team that is in a position to contend or compete for a Stanley Cup. I think that's going to be something. I think I think getting paid is always important for any player. And I think you're lying for any individual if money doesn't factor into it. I mean, come on, it's human nature. We all want to get paid. But beyond that pair, the other thing is this. Ian Clarke has had the guy, you know, the Zen master, if you will, of goalie coaches. Jacob Markstrom's success has been, you know, I think if you connect the dots, you know, Jacob Markstrom's enjoyed success with Ian Clarke as his, you know, his guidance, his counsel, his Jedi master, if you will. Does that factor in to say, okay, well, I'm going to go and do this somewhere else? Will Jacob Markstrom be as effective a goaltender if he goes elsewhere without Ian?
I will say this. If Jacob Markstrom is a member of the Vancouver Canucks next year, if he signs a deal in the next couple months, that is not the most lucrative deal that was put in front of him. I think he will have more money elsewhere. And he will not be the first. How many players sign, or then you hear from an agent, he could have signed for more elsewhere. But I do believe the pull that Markstrom has through Clark, through this organization, through how the organization helped him through a tough year, let him go away, treated him with the respect. His way of returning that respect will be saying it's not all going to be about the money. There'll be more money elsewhere. Name your city. I think he'll have some offers for others. It's just everything you said, the Ian Clarke, the city, the comfort level, the way that this team is on the rise. That's worth a dollar amount. It's just how much. Is it worth a year on a term at $6 or $5 million? Is it the protection that he seeks from expansion to make sure he's got control over where he will be in a couple years? It's some serious negotiations where I don't think bottom line is end all be all, because I think there might be more money elsewhere. But as we just pointed out, those are some of the factors that I believe Markstrom and his character will weigh in to see if he can be a big part of this future.
And the other thing is, you know, and I think a lot of this is going to fall onto Ian Clarke, you know, in terms of how much do you want to commit to Jacob Markstrom, and how far and how much do you trust Thatcher Demko going forward? I mean, with a franchise's season on the line, that guy put on three of the best performances we've seen in goal from, you know, a three-game playoff run that, you know, did Luongo have a run like that? You know, in a, facing elimination for three straight games, did Kirk McLean have a run like that for three straight games? You know, you'd have to look at the numbers, but to have three games like that, to give up just two goals, you know, well, not factoring in a shutout. I mean, that you're, with your season on the line, like, that's pretty remarkable.
It reminds me, you know, last week when that had all happened, and we'd get some of the behind-the-scenes video that the Canucks would share of the guys walking into the dressing room. And after, can't remember whether it was Demko's first game or second game, but he was fabulous. And there he is. He comes in, and the video rolls, and everyone's giving him a fun time. And then Ian Clarke walks in, and you hear half the guys in the room, "Oh, love you, Dad. Love you, Dad." You know, it's that relationship, right, that Ian Clarke has built with. So that's why there's leverage on everybody's side. You know, leverage for Markstrom to get all you can because people know that you're in your prime at 30. Leverage on the Canucks side to go, listen, we can't give you everything because the guy behind you, I think he can play the role too. So, man, it's fascinating what the Canucks will do because the decisions are so important as to the trajectory of this team. And do they take that another step forward?
Some final thoughts before we turn things over to the Scott Rintoul Show. Bobby, we see your text as well. We'll get to that and everybody else next right here on Sportsnet 650.
Now more of the Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
All right, 11 minutes to 9 o'clock. The Scott Rintoul Show taking on over at the top of the clock. Bobby in Vancouver here, Perry, saying, you know, Dallas didn't let Marchessault, Riley Smith, Pacioretty, Stastny, Cousins get away with being physical on any of their players, unlike the Canucks, especially Marchessault and Smith. These two took too many liberties on the Canucks in the series without having to pay the price. Dallas hammered them all, and it was noticeable. That's why they are heading to the Cup Final. Thanks, Bobby. You know, there is something to be said. Like, Dallas can play physical. They can play heavier if need be, and they've got those guys that are capable to do it. I mean, this is a team that is constructed for this particular moment, and I think you could kind of debate whether or not you trusted their goaltending when the postseason started, and boy, oh boy, they've been absolutely fantastic. Obviously, Anton Khudobin doing what he's doing. But the element of physicality, you know, the Canucks were able to weather, I think, the sort of heavy play from the Blues for the most part with Vegas, and they were able to pass the test against the Wild as well. But yeah, I would say Dallas can definitely play. I always thought Dallas was a bad matchup for the Canucks. That was the one matchup I thought when we talked about this at the outset. I didn't like that matchup for Vancouver.
Dallas can play that way. They just don't, because I think sometimes Dallas has been complacent. They've enjoyed the sunshine, but they've gotten their nose dirty, and they have players who can do it that way. That's why I'll be fascinated if Tampa Bay gets by, you know, the New York Islanders. And Tampa, you know, tried to get heavier and did in a sense this year. But this is not going to be a St. Louis Blues team winning a Stanley Cup, and no offense to the Blues. I think there's a little more offensive flair on Dallas, that there's a little more skill involved if the final is Dallas and Tampa Bay. And if Tampa Bay wins it, I'll be one who's happy, because I wanted to win them last year, because that changes that you can be small and fly around the ice and still have success. Now, I would also lead to the fact that these guys had 3 months off. It wasn't like an 82-game schedule, and then you go into it and you might have been worn down differently. But full credit to the Dallas Stars. I did not, you know, I questioned whether they're winning round one, and they keep on winning. It's a great story for Jamie Benn, all the time he's had on the island. It's a great story for Rick Bowness. But I'll be interested to see. There's a confidence that they have in Tampa Bay right now. And maybe it's part of me. I want Steve Stamkos to come out of the shadows somewhere on game one Thursday night and go, here he is. He's carried him for so long, and he's ready to play. I don't think it's happening. But we'll see if Tampa can get by the Islanders tonight.
Yeah, we'll wait and see on that, and see if the Lightning can punch their ticket. A fun night of sports viewing as well. You've got two games in the NBA playoffs. Game 7 between Kawhi and the Clippers and Jamal Murray and the Denver Nuggets. Winner gets the battle of the Lakers. So if the Clippers can win, it's the Battle of LA, which would be that'll be a fun matchup for the NBA from a playoff standpoint as well. Also, Game 1 of the NBA Eastern Final goes. Jays and Yankees, just a half game separating those two teams right now in the American League East. That's set to go. Jays and Yankees going at it 7 times between now and the final 14 games of the season. You mentioned fried chicken. You were curious about Popeyes, whether you're on the fence. You know, I think you should just commit to it, and after all that talk. Uh-huh. But Carl also texting in this morning saying, hey, go check out Juke Fried Chicken, which I've heard wonderful things about as well. So that might be a good spot to go check out.
A lot of people telling me not to believe the hype. I would love to say that, you know, after this morning at lunchtime, I'm going to roll there and get a chicken sandwich. I'm not there yet, people. You haven't sold me on it.
Form your own opinion, Pear. Go get it. Go get it. Form your own opinion. Go get it. Go get it, buddy.
Yeah, maybe he'll do some bad weekend eating. We'll see. Thank you for the input, though. I love it. People love their fast food. They always get going on us.
Have a great day, everybody. We're back at it on Wednesday. Joe Vocop and company right here on Sportsnet 650.